Radio.
You need to have money to get sued.
You have to have money to get sued.
All right, welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com. It is the evolution of radio. I am here with Chuck Salvatore, Lee Capreas. What else do I need to plug? Twitter, at Matt Aaron Show. Facebook, The Matthew Aaron Show. You click like. We're on Stitcher, but the best place to listen to the show is obviously the website or iTunes, where you can subscribe. I always say iTunes because it annoys Caesar because he can't track all the numbers. So really, go to iTunes and leave your comments there.
You're not on Instagram?
No, my personal account's on Instagram where
leave
I post all my
there?
Naked selfies.
Yeah, we got to have a talk about that.
You're the one that is friends with me on Snapchat, pal. First of all,
I haven't read a Snapchat of yours in
I'm months. Not.
Because you know what's coming?
Yeah. I don't want to look at
leg shots.
Is it so weird? Is it so weird to say, listen, I'm friends with you. I do pretty much anything for you, but I don't want to look at your body. Is that so weird?
Then don't look.
All right, I'm not.
Then don't look.
I haven't looked at your Snapchat in months.
Why? In months.
What's wrong with my Snapchat?
Because you take Snapchats and you're laying down with, like, working out legs today, and it's just your
have you seen
bare
those,
ass
have
and
you
boxers.
Seen the quads?
No.
First of all.
Oh, those are quads for days.
Get this out of the way. Your legs look fucking sculpted.
Thank
right?
you.
I'll give you that.
That's Steve Terrell and Lee Capri.
I don't know. I haven't seen the pictures.
Okay. Well, you know what? You're missing out, pal, is all I'm going to say.
I'll look at
I look
things.
At your snaps, though you don't post any naked selfies.
What are his true. What are his snaps of?
Do you remember the time Turzo posted a naked selfie?
Yeah.
What?
No,
well,
he was
like,
wasn't
naked.
He was
like
in a tank top.
Tank top and boxer shorts, which on Turzo is a G-string and nothing.
Yeah.
So it was pretty much a naked selfie.
Like a slingshot.
And I remember I was with Lenny when he posted this. Or was I with you? Was I with you or Lenny?
No, because I think I texted you guys about it.
Yeah, I was with Lenny. And I go, Lenny, I just got a snap. And he sent it to us. Like, I think he was still learning, like, how to use Snapchat.
Yeah, yeah.
And he sends us this snap. I go, why would you send? Now, I may post shirtless pics on there. Have I ever sent you one?
No.
Thank you. Okay? I know my audience. All right?
No, yesterday you sent me a gym shot of you with the Taz look, with the towel on your head.
Because I'm awesome when I look like that. I do look fucking sweet. At the gym, I wear a towel on my head sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I look, like, really fucking badass.
Okay.
It's like my gym look.
Like a badass
People don't
Sikh.
Talk to you. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, but it's like...
Like a Sikh who doesn't take no shit?
No, like Taz from ECW, where he wore the towel on his head when he came out to the ring.
Okay. Not the Tasmanian Devil.
This is a balding guy trick, okay?
Okay.
We wear towels on our head, so we look tough. And girls walk by us and go, ooh, he must be tough. And then when you take it off, they don't see the shine on top of your head.
Uh-huh. Not recommended to do that in an airport.
Are you even? Do you even have a? Yeah, right. Do you even have a gym membership, Chuck?
No.
You just work out.
Sir, step this way.
Do you guys have
random check?
Does your dad have like weights and stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
But he does.
Yeah.
From the cop days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bunch of workout stuff. I don't need to go to a gym.
Oh, by the way, I do want to promote our two guests today. We have two guests.
Yeah.
You know, which is not unusual for us. I say it like it's the first time ever. It's probably like the 5 billionth time ever. But this is exciting for us. Kumail Nanjiani.
Yes.
That's the Italian way of saying that
yes.
name. Nanjiani. And Jeff Tatro, who wrote Bad Johnson. So Kumail, who everyone knows from his stand-up and from Portlandia and from his appearances on Conan and Dave and...
Chicago comic, Kumail.
Chicago guy. And new show, which I think is the funniest show on TV, Silicon Valley. Which is Mike Judge, so of course I'm a homer for Mike Judge, but it is the funniest show on TV, I think. And Jeff Tatro, of course, he's the writer of Bad Johnson, which is in theaters, I believe, May 2nd, which is on video on demand now, and it's a really funny movie as well. So this is our big comedy show today. We're doing ha-has. Though, I gotta tell you, when we have serious guests on, they're usually pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, they're usually hilarious.
And then we have comedy people on, and they're not so funny.
They're usually funny, but we don't ask them to be funny. We don't make them prance around.
Here's the thing. Sean Astin's on last week, and guy's just, like, legit funny.
Yeah, he is.
And then we'll have comedians on. I don't know if they got to be funny all the time, because I guess maybe you and I would be like this. I've done a few interviews and a few other shows and stuff, and I'm really not that funny on.
Are you on all the time?
No. See, that's the thing. I think it's because I'm not on all the time that when I go do other people's shows and I'm like this, like, jerk with an opinion, that it's because I'm not on all the time.
I'm not on all the time either, but I try to at least be a little funny.
Our listeners
but I'm not even
know
on when
not
I'm,
on all
yeah,
the time.
I'm not even on when I'm on stage.
Yeah, right.
But
have you been doing stage stuff right now?
I've been hanging around the Laugh Factory a little bit. I've been working.
When you say hanging around, you're like
yeah, just,
doing
just
some stage
like cleaning
time
up
or
and
you,
yeah,
bar back.
No. I've been working on another project. I'm not going to say too much about it because every time I do, these things tend to fall apart.
Well, the audience
not
wants
talking
to know.
About the project.
They want
oh,
to know
people.
They
We're,
want to know.
By the way, it's nice to see you all here. Thank you for applauding the
Here's
intro
the
of the
thing.
Show.
Do you really want my announcement to trump yours? Because I'm pretty sure
your announcements always trump mine.
Yeah, that's not fun.
I'm like my announcements are like, well, I got my car fixed. It runs great now. Yours is like, yeah, well, they're paying me to write this.
Yeah, well, that's what's going on. I just got hired to create a show out in Los Angeles with a studio. I can't really talk about. I don't know if I'm even allowed to say that, but I'm going to do it anyways because the deal's already closed. What are they going to do? And I haven't had to sign any NDAs, so, you know, like, whatever. Anthony looks at me, Giuliano looks at me right away thinking, NDA. And then I go, I didn't sign any NDAs. And he's like, oh, you're good. Because he's, like, from producing the movie and the last show we did, like, Giuliano's mind is so much a producer's now. He is like if IRS, the wrestler, fucked Jerry Bruckheimer and they had a kid. And then you have this, like, really high, like, intensity producer who's also maybe an accountant.
Who wants you to do your taxes.
He's obsessed with the taxes. Is at every meeting we're at, Chuck, does he not bring up taxes?
We should get him one of those green visors, you know, that...
Yeah, like he's a poker?
Yeah.
Like he's
well, no, but like...
Oh, yeah. From, yeah. You always saw that in, like, the 50s, 60s movies.
Yeah.
That they would make with some accountant. You'd have
right.
the green
Anytime,
visor.
Yeah.
Yeah. But every production meeting we have, he goes, oh, we can't do that because accounting on the taxes. Oh. And then you just hear, like, noises. He gets really mad. And then he threatens to beat people up.
And to have their baby killed.
And that's why I said IRS the Wrestler, because he threatens to kill babies and beat people up.
Wow. That's really metal.
We were at a production meeting a few weeks ago, and Alex Luisi, who was one of the producers, did not come through on something that he was supposed to come through on by that day.
Really? Luisi?
I know. We were all shocked.
It was actually 3 weeks prior, but go on.
Yeah, right. And what happened? Charles, you tell the story, because I was just sitting there enjoying my barbecue.
And Anthony just started off telling him, like, all right, I'm just going to let you know I'm not happy with you. I'm not happy with you. And it escalated quickly. And Alex went into his usual, no, whatever you need. I got it. I don't believe you. No, you're not. And then he started threatening to kill his unborn child. Meanwhile, I look over. Matt's sitting there playing on his phone, pretending not to look. And Lenny's doing the same thing. And I had to step in and be the adult. And the HR person in me came out and be like, all right, guys, we're going to get kicked out of here.
Oh, Anthony totally.
His progression was a little longer than what I
It was a little longer. It was longer than the show. Okay, you're talking into nothing. Juliano, tell your little story so I can get out of
here. How have we not figured out that you need to talk into the mic?
I don't know.
All right, go on.
So what ended up happening was...
What is with this, like, Jack Handy voice you're doing all of a sudden? Talk.
I am talking.
He's like, well, what ended up happening was...
What ended up happening was we went through this whole process. There was some shouting, some yelling. And when I finally got my point across...
Are you telling the time or building a clock?
When I finally got my point across, I'm like, geez, I'm glad I didn't have to go with the original plan where I was going to abort your child. But by explaining what I was avoiding, I ended up actually telling him I was going to abort his child.
That is so harsh. What did he do to deserve?
That's what I'm saying.
It was actually after all the yelling and screaming was over, Anthony goes, all right, now that I calmed down, I was about to tell you to abort your child.
That's what happened.
Well, yeah, you can tell all you want.
So, by the way, I found an article today that I wanted to talk about. I want to see if I could find it. Alicia Silverstone wrote a book about parenting.
Yeah.
And these are always my favorite stories that are written about celebrities who want to tell you how to parent.
Can we stop listening to them? They're all morons.
Like Goop, like my good friend Goop. You know Gwyneth. Goop, Gwyneth. Yeah. Goop.
And Jenny McCarthy and.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you about all
she's
about.
She's bad.
Alicia's Alicia's just as bad. Here is some of her creative tips. One, and this is from Jezebel. The Feminazi site, but that's where I get all my mothering information from, Jezebel.
Yeah.
Your uterus is a baby house, and if you eat meat and dairy, then your baby is marinating in toxic sludge. That's Alicia's first big tip.
Everybody likes something that's marinated. It's okay.
Don't listen to pseudoscience peddled by Big Diaper. All babies should just crawl around bottomless, leaving little baby poo trails everywhere. And if you see a baby making its doo-doo face, grab it and hold it over the toilet real quick. Because toxic sludge, I guess, doesn't really matter when it's coming out of your baby's butt.
And I like what Jezebel went on to say. That's easy for her to say when she has maids to pick up all the poop.
Oh, right. Could you imagine being her maid and she lets her baby shit everywhere?
Right.
Consuela, pick up the poop.
Here's my favorite.
Yes, señor.
And I've heard
Soledad picks up.
I've heard this from a couple actresses now.
Wait. So the advice was when it looks like he's about to shit, put his little ass over the toilet?
Right.
Oh, God.
Here's another one.
What about peeing? You just let it piss anywhere like a dog?
Yeah, that's what she's saying. It's like, oh, bottomless means bottomless. Unless she's putting, like, some kind of catheter in her baby's dick and letting it pee in the bags. I don't know.
Clueless.
You should pre-chew your child's food and then baby bird it into their mouth.
Oh, my God.
That's
a joke.
She said that a while ago. Wasn't there a video of her doing that?
Yes, there's a video of her doing it, yes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Alicia Silverstone.
She really is
Batgirl.
Clueless.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Not letting your child sleep with you and your partner and your other babies in the family bed is tantamount to neglect.
Man, this is great. Where's the laugh track for that? Are they asleep?
Disgusted
or are
right
they so
now?
Shocked that, okay.
Being vegan prevents or cures every single major and minor disease, including postpartum depression.
Being what?
Vegan.
Vegan.
And if you acquire any said diseases, it's because you are an unkind mama and probably fat.
Well, she does take off her clothes in those ads.
Alicia?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, porn boy.
Isn't it, you know, you can still make fun of fat people. That's like the
well,
one group you can still...
Problem. She's saying if you're vegan, you're immune to all diseases.
Right.
You're free of all diseases.
Except for malnutrition.
Including postpartum depression. So what she's saying about all these mothers that get postpartum depression is...
It's their own fault.
Your own
that's
fault,
blaming the
fat
victim.
Bitch.
Isn't that blaming the victim?
Yeah, she's shaming people.
Yeah. That's,
this is that shaming.
That is slut-shaming or rape-shaming.
Shaming is
shaming.
The new bullying.
Yes.
Bullying.
She is a bully.
Bully isn't the hot word anymore, though, Charles. The new word is shame.
Okay.
You're shaming people. Lee and I hate bullying. The campaign against bullying.
Yeah.
We hate the now the new campaign is you're shaming. And I swear Jezebel makes up these campaigns.
Right.
They get together with GLAAD and they're like, what campaign can we come
right.
up with?
Oh, we're off bossy.
That is beneficial to feminazis and gay men everywhere.
It starts with something sensible, and then like every other group, there's some extremists
right.
who completely take it to some ridiculous notion. To sell units, to sell books.
They're making
the whole,
money off
the whole
the
thing is
of bullying.
The whole
and
thing
shaming.
Is to yes, yes.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Bullying is a different story.
Vaccines
though.
Are baby ruiners.
Yeah, that anti-vaccine shit.
Well, she's
die.
On board of that.
Die for that,
yeah,
Alicia.
She's on board
you
with
fucking
that.
Bitch.
Alicia's
how dare you?
Anti-vaccine.
Jenny
McCarthy, Jay
yeah.
Cutler, and Kristen Cavallari.
You don't
want to
do it, that's fine. Stop undermining science and people who
no,
fucking know
stop
things.
Giving measles.
You don't.
Stop giving measles to innocent people who are like 40 years old and come in contact with your anti-vaccinated
yeah.
child.
That's
what pisses me
yeah,
off.
There, by
you're
the
making
way,
me sick
there is,
with your little anti-vaccine baby.
The science behind the anti-vac... There's no science behind anti-vaccine movement.
She doesn't call it a vagina. It's called the chi-chi.
The chi-chi? Okay.
The chi-chi.
Yeah.
Is the most absorbent part of your body, and tampons are murdering you from the inside.
What does that mean?
Tampons are murdering
you.
You
should just
body.
Be able to bleed wherever, and your housemate will pick it up. Like
yeah, right.
Toilet.
Right.
So now the maid has to clean up shit, piss, and Alicia's bloody
so that scene in Dirty Love when Jenny McCarthy bleeds all over the supermarket,
she obviously
it's
hates tampons.
An extension of her political beliefs. It's not just shitty screenwriting.
I love how you found political meaning in Dirty Love.
I did, yes.
Well done. Like,
we do our homework on this show more than these fucking stupid anti-science, anti-vaccine, washed-up actresses.
And I gotta tell you, these are the people that give liberals, like, a bad name
yes.
and make me not like liberals.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm not a conservative. I'm not a liberal. I just don't like any
there is also those people, what are they called? Politicians.
Yeah, politicians.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, I got to tell you, Alicia's out of her fucking mind.
I know.
Does that not make you, like, never want to even work with that broad? Because you're just going to be looking at her, thinking of all these stupid things she
I'm
going
to have to ditch the script I was writing
yeah,
for her.
Right? Clueless 2?
Clueless 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Or what was the one she did after Clueless with Chris Walken where she's, like, excess baggage? Remember
yeah,
that one
excess
where she's,
baggage.
Like, kidnapped in the trunk of a car?
Right.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And then after that was
Batman
the scene stealer and Batgirl. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Batman and Robin where she had the mustache.
Yeah.
Because she probably doesn't believe in shaving because... Shaving kills your body.
What happens to people when they stop being in movies? They just go insane.
I wonder if she's always been insane, though. She kind of looks like she would be.
She probably starves herself, and she's not getting enough food, and her wiring upstairs is all messed up.
Well, that's one anti-feminist way to look at things.
Yeah, well,
that's one misogynist way to look at things.
Welcome back to the Rush Limbaugh Show. Put that...
You know, I'm starting to wonder, though, if, like, Clueless was just, like, an extension of herself, and that's why she was so great.
Clueless is a good movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, was her playing Cher just an extension of herself?
No.
Because has she really been great in anything else?
No.
No.
What else has Alicia Silverstone been in that you were like, she was so good?
She was good as eye candy in that one Aerosmith video.
That's oh, that's true.
That's it.
With her and Liv.
Yeah.
And they're like making out.
That's the only yeah, thing. Yeah,
the
right.
key
right.
there, she didn't have to talk.
Yeah, right, 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 right. right. You listen to Steven
that's
Tyler.
That's her magnum opus.
Yeah, right.
She's, yeah. No, it's really.
Oh, and.
Science.
No
people.
Sugar for babies either. She doesn't believe in that.
Yeah.
So we can assume that she's just crazy.
Pretty soon your baby will be gaunt and yellow just like you are.
By the way, if you do not follow Paul Schrader on Facebook, you're missing out on so much great stuff. And one of the things that I posted from Paul Schrader was Richard Gere starred in American Gigolo, which, of course, is a Paul Schrader film.
Schrader.
It was originally John Travolta, and there's a poster made from 1979 maybe, with John Travolta in it that was made in one of the people that worked on the film's backyard, and Paul posted it on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just great.
Uh-huh.
Seeing, like, film history like that, and then it ended up not being John. But you see John as the character of the gigolo, and you're wondering what that could have been then. And by the way, he looks good.
That's a collector's item.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
It's like the, for Revenge of the Jedi. You know that famous poster?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It is just like that. But he's just great. He posts, like, weird, like, dark, humorous things.
Yeah. I love it.
And you know what? It's stuff like this, though. But if you're a film buff, you talked about how you just watched 1935's Dangerous with Bette Davis.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying how great of a treat it was to slip back into a time when movies were smart, character-driven fantasy fulfillments.
Yeah.
They don't do that anymore.
No, they don't.
No. Because they're all comic book movies now. Yeah, I mean, you just post some great stuff. So if you don't follow Paul Schrader, I really recommend it. It's well worth. I told Lee a couple weeks ago. I go, you're missing out. You don't even have to add the guy or whatever. But
no,
like,
just follow him.
Follow him. Another cool thing I found yesterday is on YouTube. The British Path posted 85,000 historical films on YouTube, and you could see that the British Path. That's PATHE.
Things
like the Hindenburg disaster,
right.
Like all these great news clips and
stuff that isn't even on Fandor. If you have Fandor,
right.
Which is a really good thing to have.
Right. There's a lot of other stuff on here. Right. David Spade has a new special coming out on Comedy Central. I watched it last night. It is funny. He's funny, funny, funny. I love David Spade.
Yeah.
There is a clip I'm going to play. I was going to play it off my screener, but my screeners decided not to work. So I found a clip that's actually maybe the funniest bit in the special anyway. So I'm going to see if I can get that to play. Nothing wants to play on my Google Chrome, long story short. I've decided Google Chrome's the worst.
All right, next segment. So.
I don't know yet if it's going to play or not. I haven't clicked.
Okay.
I'm going to look for it. I'm going to look for it.
Heresy. Chrome is the best.
You really like Chrome? I don't know.
I'm kind of coming around to Chrome sucks.
It's better than going to Africa on a safari.
What's Africa on a safari? I don't even know what that means. What does that mean? What did he just say?
On your crapple computer.
What is Africa on a safari?
He's talking about safari. It's another like internet thing.
Oh, okay. I guess. Anyways, here from the special with Davey Spade.
Bunch of nerds.
Because unless you're Chris Brown and you have this huge hog, I like when Chris Brown's pictures get leaked out to the media. Oh, my God, I'm so bummed out. My huge donkey dick is out on the internet. Like, really? Are you really sweating bullets over this one? Of the picture that was obviously your 15th selfie. Jeez. Well, just the balls. Well, maybe the whole thing. Like, oh, my God, someone broke into my laptop, and then they're on the internet. Really? By the way, dude. How hard is that? I can't even get in my own laptop half the time. You know, it's like password. What's my password? It's so funny. I go, I'm supposed to believe someone stole your laptop from the airport, ran home, cracked the code, found your wiener pictures, and then sent it to your 10 favorite websites, and you put out a press release in a half hour. Really? Like, oh my God, please don't look at my dick pics. Here's the link. And you know it's leaked because you never see an actor with a tiny wiener get those pictures leaked, you know? Then you'd see some scrambling in Hollywood. Shut down the internet? The whole internet? Uh-huh. Boom, boom, boom. Let's figure this out. Let me think.
Oh, that's good. His whole special's great. Actually... I will say that's his funniest like joke bit, and it's pretty much his only topical bit. That, I mean, a lot of it that was like really funny for me is he talks about growing up being poor, and like he's so good about it. Like, I don't know, there's just this humor with David Spade that I really dig. He's a really down to earth dude.
He is.
Yeah,
I worked for him.
Yeah,
and He's a good guy. I was just chatting with him. I was working for him and Kevin Farley, Chris's brother, and I was caddying. It was a tournament, and he was putting, and Kevin Farley went up and farted on him while he was putting. Ah, you got me. Farts are funny.
They are funny.
Yeah, that's what he said. I'm like, we had a talk. Yep. That was,
oh,
yeah.
They're the best. Oh, Mikey here?
No, not yet.
No.
You can continue your story.
Yeah, was, I, no.
Oh, that was the whole thing?
No,
Kevin
no,
Farley
no,
farted
there,
on David's
there is
fan.
More. Well, it's okay. Not, yeah. There was. They were a good time.
They were a good time.
Say it was those two. Hey, Farrell's. He was like, it was basically like having Chris alive again because he looks and sounds just
Kevin
like
does,
him.
Yeah.
And they play off each other like they did when Chris was alive. You know, like Chris,
oh, him and David?
Chris and David, yeah. Kevin and David. And, it, you know, Farrell's, you suck at golf. And then, like, he'll hit a shot and Kevin Farrell's like, well, I fucked that one up pretty good. You know, in that Farley manner. He's not like that, but I'm
yeah,
like,
right.
Holy shit, this is really eerie. It's, like, scary.
Yeah.
But they're really nice. And, like, he acts like... Spade acts like he's Mr. Hollywood, but it's like a put-on. He's not.
It is.
He makes fun
it
of
is.
It. He knows it's bullshit. He's a really good dude, smart dude.
I was just talking
I
to
like
Tobias
him.
About that on the phone with him today about how, like, David knows he's, like, big time. He knows. He knows he is. But he also knows it's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
But I mean, but David does live his life accordingly, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he is, like, he knows he's big time. He's going to live that way. It's just great to see guys like Spade and Nealon still doing stand-up.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, Lee.
You can't not do it.
A lot
if
of the
you
greats
really like
have died, and the ones that haven't died really aren't doing it anymore.
Yeah.
Like, when you think about it. So it's nice to see... guys like Spade and Nealon still going up there week after week. I mean, Nealon does all the time at the Laugh Factory.
He does,
as you know.
Uh-huh.
And I just watched Nealon's special. Nealon, I think's funny, but he's definitely an acquired taste. Because Kevin is really, what's the best word for Nealon's comedy you would describe? He's really
cerebral.
No, he's just like he's like. A less energetic version of Norm MacDonald.
Yeah.
And
there's already something a little esoteric about Norm MacDonald because his shit is really smart.
Yeah.
And, like, disarmingly so. And so is Kevin.
Disarmingly is the best thing to say about Norm and Kevin, too. Because you don't even know you're in on the joke.
Yeah.
Because they disarms the word. They take it out from you. Right. You know, I'd like to see Damon Wayans go back to doing more stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
I know he was doing some, and you bumped into him at one of your gigs.
Right.
But, yeah, there's a lot of guys that just aren't doing it. When's the last – oh, Tim Allen has his show at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah,
but
still
see,
doing
people
it.
People don't know this. Like, people outside of Hollywood
don't
know,
that Tim,
these guys are
that
still
Tim
doing
Allen,
stand-up.
A guy who has a bazillion dollars and is on TV still, does stand-up.
Yeah, I've met Tim. He's a really good
great
dude.
Great guy, yeah. I met him, too.
He's a nice dude.
Yeah.
And
Damon, too.
And he's really not Hollywood either.
No.
Let's see. I have a phone call. Let's see what we have going on here. Hello, you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who's speaking?
Hey, this is Kamel.
Kamel, how are you? Did I get your
I'm
name
good. Right?
Did I get your last name right?
Oh, I don't know. Say it again.
All right. I'm going to give you the Italian pronunciation of your last name, because that's what it is to me. Nanjiani.
That's exactly perfect.
All right, see? But you like it how Italians say it, don't you? It's better than when other
people... Yeah, I mean, it does sound Italian. Nanjiani.
Nanjiani. Oh. Well, you look Italian. It all makes sense. You probably have to tell a lot of people you're not Italian.
I like pizza.
There you go. Brother, I got to tell you, front, right up front, Silicon Valley is the funniest show on TV. It's that good. Three episodes in, it's that good. Now, I'm a big Mike Judge mark, as everyone that listens to the show knows. King of the Hill is my favorite show ever. But that all being said, I was so shocked how good this show was, like, right out of the gate. And I got to tell you, my first question for you about this show, because this is something that is, like, first of all, this is a brilliant satire. This and Portlandia. So you're kind of getting known for doing satirical material. That's kind of a weird two words there, satirical material. But
satirial.
Yeah, satirial. But I got to ask you, how much different is it to do satire than it is to do, like, the Farrelly Brothers or something along those lines?
You know, I haven't really done much Farrelly Brothers kind of stuff. I think those guys are hilarious, but all the comedy I've done has been, like, pretty grounded. So when you're doing Satirial, you really sort of, you know, the trick is to just kind of play it straight. Like, the guys don't know it's a comedy. You know, like, my character in these shows doesn't know it's a comedy. So it's about sort of playing it pretty grounded and pretty straight, you know, not being too wacky.
Do you ever come across people that watch Silicon Valley or Portlandia that are like, yeah, I guess it's funny, but I really don't like any of you?
Well, I mean, people say that about my Portlandia characters all the time. They're like,
right.
I think you're really funny, but I hope I never run into you. Like, I hear
right.
that all the time.
Just, you're the guy that's just disinterestedly slowing the entire world down. I love
yeah,
that.
And I want to be like, you know, I'm acting, right? Like, that's
yeah.
not who I am.
Well, that's why I find this so that's why I find you to be such a good actor, especially coming out of stand-up, which is great, is you're doing these two shows that, like, I don't think people understand, like, you guys not being particularly likable is how it's supposed to be.
Right.
And it's and you're doing a really good job at it.
Oh, thank you, I guess.
Yeah, you're welcome, I guess. Yeah, he's like, well, here's my point. I'm watching Silicon Valley. Okay, and I'm watching these guys, and, like, one, I never want to cheer for nerds, really, anyways. But two, it's like these guys are – your guy's smart. The guy that plays the Canadian's smart. Like, these guys are smart, except the lead is so socially inept that you're like, what a loser. And, like, he gets you to cheer for him, which is the quality of the writing and the quality of the material. But these characters at the base should not be cheered for. I'm, like, watching the show, and I'm like, if I was reading the script and didn't see these actors pulling it off so well, I don't know if I'd cheer for any of these guys. But now I'm cheering for you.
Well, but then the thing is that you're seeing these guys and you don't want to cheer for, but they're going against people who are even worse than them. So you kind of have to cheer for them because otherwise you're cheering for basically Lex Luthor, you know?
That's what I was saying. I was saying before the show, I was talking to my buddy and I was saying it's like you're cheering for them because they're going up against evil nerds.
Right.
It's like good nerds versus evil nerds.
Yeah, but the good nerds also have the capacity to become evil nerds, and you see that sort of every now and then. So I think that's what's interesting. I don't know how, you know, we got picked up for another season, which is great. I don't know how many seasons we're going to go or how much the story we're going to be able to tell, but it's interesting that all these characters have the capacity to become those evil nerds, and I really wanted to see what Mike has in store for us.
Yeah,
it's going to outlast True Blood.
Well, that's interesting. You just answered my second question, which was going to be, can we see these guys turn into those evil corporate nerds? I mean, we already saw it with the one character, Big Head, who goes to Hooli and takes a deal with Hooli to kind of as revenge towards being left out of the company. Are there going to be more storylines like that further in this season?
Yeah, you definitely see, like, my character, I always think of my character as being a very selfish guy who thinks he should be sort of at the top of the pile, who thinks he's smarter than everybody. And it's just with, he likes him, but I think he'd be okay sort of betraying him, you know. So we definitely, you'll see towards the end of the season, like, right now you don't, you know, I think episode 5 is when you find out the big plot point that's going to be the rest of the season. So basically episodes 6 through 8 are like one long sort of movie. It all sort of flows into each other. And in that, you'll see my character and Guilfoyle, Martin Starr's character, have, we're sort of faced with the opportunity to sort of do something that you maybe don't want them to do.
There's so many laugh-out-loud moments on this show so far. Oh, hold on one second, Lee. I just want to ask one thing. there's so many moments on this show where I bust out laughing, and it's like I said, it's a satire, so sometimes you're just saying in your head, oh, that's funny. Then there's some legitimate moments where you're really busting out laughing. If you were to, let's say the show was televised, which it never should be, and you had to bring a clip on this show, what is the one scene so far from the first 3 episodes that you would show to people to say, this is why you should watch the show?
I really like that scene where we are basically talking, saying bad stuff about Big Head, and he just ends up being in the room over and over.
Yes, yes, it's great. That scene is great.
I think that scene's really funny because all of us are in it. We all sort of have different roles in it. You sort of see how we're callous, but we're not evil. And it's just really funny. I mean, I think there's like 3 or 4 huge laughs in that, you know, 45-second scene.
It's really, really good. I was going to say it's either, for me, it's either that scene or when Richard has the guy that he's trying to buy Pied Piper from and he comes to the house and you guys are all, you're all doing what Jared said, which is just say your name out loud so he recognizes you're a human.
Yeah. I mean, that seems really funny. And it's really interesting that you bring that up. That scene was not scripted. Like, before that, the scene where Jared says that if you say the name of the assailant, if you say that your own name, they think of you as a human, that was, we were just sort of goofing around, and someone had that idea, so we just, Jared just says it in the scene. And then later, while we were shooting that, they just added that part to it. So it was this huge, like, joke that was never in the script. It was just sort of came in the moment.
You know, with a bunch of comedians on the show, do you guys improv? How much room does Mike Judge and company give you guys to do improv?
He does give us room, but the scripts, you know, when we get the scripts, they're so good and so funny that we kind of stick to pretty close to them for the most part. There are improvs that show up here and there, you know, sort of little things, nothing big. Like that, what I just described to you, was probably the biggest one we had. But he lets us put in little stuff here and there, play around a little bit. We get to, you know, do a take where we could try something different. And they do end up using a bunch of it. But for the most part, when you see the script, it's like completely done. All the jokes are there. It's the opposite of Portlandia, where Portlandia is 90% improv.
Yeah, right. And Lee is a bigger fan of Portlandia. I just haven't watched them all. You've seen them all, right?
I've seen most of it, yeah.
Most of them. And Lee was telling me how great you are on Portlandia.
I'll tell you, it's amazing. I think it's good satire because it makes you feel a little uncomfortable, and it has that built into it. There are things in Portlandia that I think are a little too painfully accurate for me to laugh at. Like,
but that's Silicon Valley,
yeah,
too. That's what's so on the money.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's sometimes painful to laugh at the reality of it.
Right.
Yeah, there was so much stuff in Silicon Valley that I thought, well, I would read it and I was like, this is too much of a joke. And they're like, no, this really happened. There's so much stuff. Like, you know, in the first episode where Richard, or the second episode where he tries to deposit the check and it doesn't happen, that actually happened to, I think, the Google founders or somebody big like that. That's a real thing that happened to somebody. So a lot of the stuff you see on the show is sort of taken and twisted from real life.
Especially the first episode. I mean, Camille, I would say the first episode is a lot like that. And that's what I tell people before they watch it is like, listen, that opening scene, you're going to watch that and you're going to be like, what the fuck? With Kid Rock and like everything going on at that house. And I'm like, that, but it's so real. That's why it's funny.
Oh, yeah. We can swear on the show?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Like, another improv moment, like, for instance, this is a good example of it. That, do you remember when my character says that it looks like, our logo looks like a guy sucking a dick and he's got another dick tucked behind his ear for later?
That was a good thing to put in the commercial for the show, the ad for the show.
But then saying the part where I said, like, a snack dick, the rest of the line was scripted, but snack dick, just that part was improv.
That's funny. I did like that. I did like that line with the Pied Piper. Anthony wanted to know who the techiest person on the show is. Is there anyone that's like really techie?
You know, I actually did study computer science in college. I was never any good at it, and that's what the stereotype breaks down. But I was no good at it. But out of all those guys, I'm probably the one who understands the technical jargon most, but as long you know, but if you're talking about like other stuff, like I play video games a lot, Martin Starr plays a lot of video games, Thomas plays video games and he also plays Magic the Gathering, so we're all sort of nerds in different ways. Like Zach Woods is like a music nerd. TJ, I would say, is the one who's the least like his character.
Wow, okay. All right, that makes sense. Now, let me ask you to change gears real quick, because I think this is really important. Peter Gregory on the show is played by Christopher Evan Welch, and he passed away in December from lung cancer, which was a terrible loss. How does that affect the show going forward, though? What do you guys do with something like that, where you have a character who's so integral to the show and in real life they pass on or something happens like that? What do you guys do?
Well, for us, you know, it was really tough because we found out while we were shooting. So we'd shot one scene, we were shooting the second scene of the day, and we found out. And just the way the sort of, you know, the economy of it works, you kind of have to keep going. So I remember that the scene we shot was me and TJ, and I'm really curious to see it because it was so hard to get through that scene. And the other thing that was hard was that because of insurance reasons, et cetera, we weren't really allowed to take any time off. So we actually shot through that weekend. So it was really tough. It was also, like, really weird. It felt weird to try and be funny when this horrible thing had happened, you know? It's not like we're shooting a drama where you can use the emotion. This is, you really have to be funny. So it just kind of felt vulgar doing it. But then, you know, my wife actually was like, hey, the only thing you can do is your job. Like, all you can do is try and put him in the best show that he could be a part of as his last thing, you know. So that's sort of how we all thought about it. And then story-wise, you know, he's not in episodes 6, 7, and 8, and he was a big part of the story, as you said. And these guys had to do a lot of rewrites, and they actually did reshoots earlier this year to sort of cover it. I mean, you know, next season, I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to do something major, but episodes 6, 7, and 8, they were sort of able to, you know, just put him out of the scene, behind the scenes and stuff like that. Like, oh, he's not here right now, stuff like that. But
it's rough, too, he's amazing as Peter Gregory on the show. That Burger King scene, the third episode with the Burger King storyline. And, like, you're thinking, if you're, like, a cynical person, you're watching, you're like, oh, product placement central. But the way it comes together and the way he delivers it's so great. I don't even know if I should say it's funny. It's just great. That it's really disappointing when you see something like that.
Yeah, and he was so good. And, you know, to me, the hardest stuff, obviously, it's toughest for his family. But the scenes that we did table reads for that were scripted in 6, 7, and 8 that nobody's ever going to see except us actors, you know, when we did rehearsal, it's the only time. That, to me, I feel really sad when I think about that, because he had some really, really great stuff that with him and his nemesis sort of directly, a bunch of scenes that were really going to be fantastic, and, you know, obviously we're never going to see them now.
This is more than we're used to hearing from people who are on HBO shows about what's upcoming.
That's true.
How
that's
quiet, tight-lipped they are.
We had another question. If someone wants to know, I don't want to out them, but someone wants to make sure there's more Amanda Crew on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, her part gets bigger and bigger, too. Like I said, once the main story kicks in, I believe around 5 or 6, she sort of becomes one of our crew when she's around a lot, lot more. Like, I don't want to ruin what happens, but, yeah, she's around a lot more.
Okay. So you
okay, Anthony?
You began your career doing stand up in Chicago, which was around, like, what year would you say that was that you started doing stand up?
2002, about, yeah.
Right after college. Yeah, right after college, and that was before us then too, wasn't it?
That was right.
Were you
about
doing stand up in 2002?
No, I didn't get out of college till 2005. So by the time I got on the scene, Kumail had already done it. I don't know if you remember, but I used to host Phyllis's Musical Inn on Division Street, and you played.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you played there a couple of times, and at that point you were starting to really get going, and you'd said that you were doing this one man show. Based on your personal experiences, and then you were opening for Zach Galifianakis, I believe, at the Vic Theater, and people were like,
that's
Kumail's going places.
Yeah,
that's right. That was around 2006. That was when I sort of did a little tour with Zach and opened for him, and that did that one-man show you're talking about. And
that's right.
That was when sort of things started getting going a little bit.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to ask you. How did things start get going as a stand-up? You're doing stand-up for years. How many dates would you say you were doing a year just as an amateur comedian, like before you started getting hired to do gigs and stuff, just to get your work down, just get the practice in? How many dates were you doing, like, a week?
I mean, in New York, I was probably doing about 8 or 9, 10 shows a week, a lot of shows.
Yeah, you would. So you would do any open mic that was open. that was.
Yeah, as soon as I, you know, Chicago didn't have as many shows as New York did. When I moved to New York, I would do like 3-4 open mics a night because I was like, well, I've spent all my money to move to New York, and I really, really have to give this a shot. I've seen so many people move to New York or L.A., and then they just sit around and do nothing. And I was like, well, I'm just going to try my hardest, and, you know, that's all I can do. Hopefully something happens.
Yeah, Lee and I talk about that all the time when we were in L.A.
Yeah,
like,
we
people would just sit.
Yeah, they, yeah, hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
We went through all that. We lived there for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. So let me ask you then, what was your big break in stand-up? When was the moment where people started recognizing you?
I would say, actually, opening for Zach really helped me. I did a show with him in Chicago, a small show that I just happened to be on with him, and he sort of took me on the road. And that was great. But then when I moved to New York, there was a show in New York that Eugene Merman and Bobby Tisdale used to run called Invite Them Up. That was the best show. Best awesome show in New York. And Zach recommended me for that, and I ended up doing that show, and that really, really helped me. Like, I was in New York only a month, and it takes people years to get on that show. So I was lucky I was able to do that. And then I don't know if you guys know who Eugene Merman is, but he took me on tour with him. And then I ended up writing for the show called Michael and Michael Have Issues on Comedy Central.
And Michael Ian Black.
And they, Michael Ian Black and Michael Showalter, and they let me have a little part on that show, and that really, like, changed everything.
How'd you get the staff writing gig on Michael and Michael Have Issues? Michael Ian Black's been on the show, and I'm friendly with him. He's a great guy, and he's so funny. But how'd you get the staff writing gig on that show?
It's all luck. You know, one thing leads to another. So, like, Zach led to doing a show with Eugene, and then doing shows with Eugene led to meeting Showalter. Eugene and Showalter used to run a show together, so I did that show a couple times. Then there was this group called Stella, which is Showalter, Black, and David Wayne, who's really funny, and, you know, he directed Role Models. He's an amazing movie director now. So they were doing this three-man comedy thing, and their opener fell out, and they were doing this tour. So he called me. And I just met him through Eugene, who was like, hey, do you want to open for us? So I went and opened for them, I think, for a few weeks, Michigan, like, through the Midwest. And then they got their own show, and I emailed them, and I was like, hey, I'd love to write for it. Then, you know, they had me, like, do some writing samples and do an interview and stuff. But the fact that I toured with them and knew those guys really helped, and that basically is how I got that job.
Is it, to switch gears a little bit, you are not adverse to podcasts. You know a lot about podcasts. You've done podcasts. You do podcasts over at The Nerdist, The Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail. But let me ask you about the Indoor Kids, which I know you did with your wife, correct?
Yes, that's right.
How is it working with your spouse?
Go ahead.
No. I was going to ask you what are the good and bad things, but you said it's really great, so I'm going to let you just tell me how great it is.
Well, obviously, you know, I mean, you have to be careful to keep the boundaries because you can have, like, professional disagreements that then you can sort of, you know, the lines start getting blurred, and you have to be careful of that. But the good thing is we're very similar. We know each other so well that we really work well together, and we sort of work well together in different ways. Like, we sort of bring different things to it. So the show you mentioned, Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail, we did 8 episodes for Comedy Central that we're editing right now, and I performed on it, and she produced it. So it was really, actually really helped because she's really good with people. I sometimes will, like, get a little, you know, I'll, like, burn a bridge or something. I'm, like, not good at it. Like, if someone does something I don't like, I can have a bad reaction, and she says, well, it's not about revenge. You just have to get what you want. That's the most important thing, so be nice to people. That's the best way to do it. So she, her and I work really well together in that way. And,
There's a little yin yang.
Yeah, exactly. There is.
Let me ask you, you got this great event coming up. I wish I was in LA this week for it. Well, it's coming up on, Sunday, April 27th, the night of, at least 18 laps. It's the third annual of that. It's hosted by Kevin Nealon, who we were just talking about.
Hey-o.
Kevin's got his hand in all the comedy cookie jars in L.A. And the Dave Attell, Will Forte, yourself, Ali Wong, and Amy Schumer, and you're going to have other guests there as well. That's going to be killer. That sounds like a great show.
Yeah, that's an unbelievable lineup. And it was going to be Dana Gould, and then Dana Gould had to drop out. So they, you know, he sort of put my name in. It's and the special guests that you guys don't know of yet are insane. Like, as soon as I heard about that show, I'm nervous, and I've been nervous more and more each day.
Well, I won't talk about it anymore.
Oh, you're killing it.
I don't have that. But let me ask you about this. We were talking about Kevin Nealon. We were talking about David Spade. We were talking about it's great to see guys that have been around for 20 years or so still doing the stand-up scene.
Yeah.
Who would you say are some of the 40, 50, 50-year-old guys that are still around that you really love on the stand-up scene?
Well, obviously, I mean, everyone mentions Louis C.K. He's really great. But I would love to see, like, I haven't seen Seinfeld, you know. I'd love to see him. I know he performs a lot. I think Colin Quinn is one of the funniest guys in the world.
Yeah, I agree. I think Colin Quinn is really underrated.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are just put off by his, like, manner of speech, and they're missing – he's so smart and so good.
I think
he's a great guy, too. He's really great. He just likes to, like, needle people. Like, if you follow him on Twitter, you'll see he just, like, tries to get into fights. It's really funny.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, he's one of the best, you know. I mean, he's so good. Who else? You know, one of my favorites is, do you guys know Jake Johansson?
Yeah. Very good.
That guy, I think, you know, that guy's one of the funniest, like, sort of road comedians in the world. Brian Regan's really, really funny, you know. I mean, these guys are really, like, killing harder than they've ever killed and just sort of, you know, working.
Is the L.A. comedy scene better than the New York comedy scene right now?
It feels like it, although I haven't been to New York in a while. When I first moved to L.A., which was 2010, the L.A. comedy scene, the live scene wasn't that great. But then a lot of my friends, like a lot of the people that I did comedy with in New York all moved here at the same time.
Yeah.
And so the scene here is really, really good right now. There's a lot of really great shows of all different levels. And I don't know New York how it's doing. I haven't been back in a while, but I hear it's a little... It's not as, you know, crazy as it used to be, but it that always happens. It cycles, you know.
How when you have such a star-studded lineup at every comedy show in L.A., every night of the week, how are guys going to break into that? How do you break in as a comedian when every night you got these star-studded lineups?
You mean how do you get on those shows?
Yeah, how are you going to end up getting in there if you're an up-and-coming comedian?
That's the magic question.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard, man. I mean, I think the key is just to do as much as you can and keep killing. And if you're killing every time, then someone's going to see you and put you on a show. And then once you get on one show, you get on other shows, you know? I mean, the good thing is that a lot of the people who are really funny, big name, really successful, love seeing new comedians be funny, and they really want to help people out. Like, I certainly had a lot of people who helped me out. Like I said, Eugene Mervin, Zach Galifianakis, Michael Ian Black, and Showalter, those guys really, really helped me out. Sarah Silverman helped a bunch of people out. So I think you just sort of have to keep at it and be really funny because, you know, if you're doing smaller shows, you'll get some pretty big people to show up. Like Sarah Silverman drops in at small shows. Patton Oswalt drops in at small shows all the time. So, you know, just keep doing it and something's going to happen. The good thing about comedy is that it is merit-based completely. Either people are laughing or they're not, you know. Like, you can talk yourself into something, but if you're not funny, you're never going to get booked again. But if you're a funny, involuntary thing, and you're going to get the success you deserve.
Yeah, I would ask you, too, because from the stand-up world, and Lee and I have been in the stand-up world for a while. I haven't been in a few years because I've been doing this and writing and acting and stuff. But I was going to ask you about how do you deal with the personalities in the stand-up scene? Because it's even more so, I would think, than film and TV. You're dealing with some eccentric characters, and you do have to get along and network with people. How easy is it to network when you're bumping into so many people that are, like, maybe not the nicest guys on the planet?
Well, I'm sort of lucky in that all the people who are, like, sort of my friends, who are – a lot of my friends are really, really successful now. Like, you know, Amy Schumer is a good friend of mine, and Pete Holmes has his own show, and Hannibal obviously is doing really well, and Anthony Jeselnik, and all these people that are sort of my peers, I would say, really, really funny people, are all really, really nice. Like, we're all really good friends, Natasha Leggero and Moshe and everybody. So I don't really feel like, you know, that there's a lot of resentment or anything. I actually feel like the comedy scene right now, at least the people I hang out with, are all really funny and want people to be funny. And if they have a project, they'll invite me. And if I have something, I'll invite them. Like for Meltdown, I had all my friends come and do the show. And then, you know, Anthony's show I went and did. I'm going to do Amy's show. So it's kind of great. Nick Kroll has his own show. I mean, it's all...
So the lesson to learn, here is just make good friends.
Yeah.
Good... and be nice, you know. I truly think if you're nice, people are going to be nice to you back.
I agree. I would say 95% of the people that I'm nice to are nice to me back. I would say that the odds are in your favor if you're nice. Yes.
It's a pretty good odds.
Yeah, and that 5% you can't do anything about anyway, so don't even worry about it.
And I will say this. Over the years in Hollywood and New York, I've noticed this, and I think it's getting better, where talent is – there's such an abundance of talent that it's easy for people to say, you know what, you're not easy to work with, fuck off. And they'll just move on to someone else. So I think those people are kind of getting weeded out anyways.
Oh, yeah, you'll see a lot of people. I don't want to name names, but you're like, oh, that guy's really funny. Why don't I see him and stuff? And you always hear, oh, that guy's an asshole. He's tough to work with. There's always someone nice, you know, who's, like, willing to put in the work. Because the thing is, if you're on a hot streak and you're a dick, people are just waiting for you to fuck up once. And you fuck up once, and then everybody leaves.
I agree. I think one of the best things was when I met Russell Peters, and he's the hottest of the hot. And when I met Russell Peters, I go, oh, man, he's going to be a dick. I know it. He's so fucking hot right now. What has he got? He doesn't need to talk to me. Nicest guy ever.
Yeah, he really is a great guy. I met him at the Montreal Comedy Festival, and he's awesome, yeah.
He's just one of the dudes. He's fun.
he's like a billionaire.
Yeah, he is like a billionaire. Yeah, he's found a way to be this, like, underground comedic success, but even while he was underground making billions of dollars. I don't know how he did it.
He figured out how to make money.
He does shows, you know, in other countries and stuff. That's great. Like, a lot of people make a lot of money doing that. And that's what I did, like, Melbourne last year or, like, Edinburgh, and their scene is so different. They aren't really aware of people here, so you kind of have to start over a little bit. But, you know, he's been at it for so long that he's got a following in almost every country.
Yeah, his worldwide appeal is amazing, which is – what shocks me is I've talked to him, and he wants to do, like, movies and TV shows and stuff, and people aren't putting – I know he's doing Last Comic Standing. He's one of the judges this year on Last Comic Standing, and that's great that Wanda Sykes probably noticed him or someone else that's producing the show. But he wants to do movies and stuff. It's like, dude, he has worldwide appeal. Why aren't you not putting him in movies? I don't get it.
He's
so
a good actor, too. I've seen him in stuff. He's good.
He was in Source Code. That's the only thing he
was in. Blows my mind that people miss out on these kind of things. So what do you have coming up in the future, Camille, outside of Silicon Valley?
I'll have the Meltdown with Jonah and Kamal is going to premiere in the fall sometime.
So you guys are doing that on TV? Are you going to do that on TV? Or is it still
just
good?
Yeah, we shot 8 episodes for Comedy Central, and we're editing them right now. And we have an amazing lineup. We got Tom Lennon. We got Weird Al Yankovic to do it. Rob Hubel, Paul Scheer. I mean, we got some really, really, like, really have.
Listen, Camille, we've gotten those guys, too.
Yeah, it's true. See, those guys, that's the thing, is that they all like to work. They all like doing stuff. They're not like, they don't say no. If they think something's cool, they'll do it. So that'll come out in the fall, and then I'm going next month to do more Portlandia, so I'll be in season 5 of that.
Isn't it great to be doing 2 TV shows at once, or 3 TV shows at once? It's got to be a good time in your life right now, brother.
Oh, it's good. I mean, I love working, and I like that I'm able to do the kind of stuff I want to do. You know, I'm not forced to do stuff for money that I don't think is cool. Like, I've been really lucky to sort of get connected with these people who are doing really, really great stuff. Like with Portlandia, they all do all the hard work. I show up, goof around, and then they make me look great.
What do you guys do? Like, obviously, doing 3 TV shows right now, vacation's kind of got to be hard to come by, but what do you and your wife do, like, when you need free time? Do you travel? Like, where are your favorite places to travel? I love traveling.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of, you know, I was touring a lot. Like, I was doing festivals in other countries, and I would count those as vacations, and then we were like, nope, that's not really vacation. So we've been to, we went to Scotland last year for vacation. We went to Edinburgh, and we went to the UK. We've been to, we went to Singapore. We went to Bali. So we love to travel, I mean, as much as we can, you know.
Oh, that's great. I just don't know where you find the time. I can't find the time, and I got a half a TV show.
Yeah, right.
I have a development deal. I have no time. what else was I going to ask? What do you got, Lee? You got some more stuff?
No, just,
I got so much. We didn't ask how working with Mike Judge is, because one time we had someone on from King of the Hill, and it's slipping my mind at the moment, and they were talking about how Mike Judge basically Skyped in his performances.
Right.
Which was amazing. Now, I know Mike actually directed the first two episodes of this show. The episodes Mike didn't direct, was he even on set? Like, how is – Mike Judge is a very private guy. How is it working with him?
He really is a private guy, but he was on set all day, every day for this. I mean, I would say he directed four of the eight, and the other two were directed by this guy, Alec Burr, who's like, you know, he's a Seinfeld guy, and he was the
– Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah.
Yeah. So him and Mike, I would say, were the two sort of really working together to do that. So Alec directed two, but I would say that, you know, Mike and Alec sort of co-directed six of the eight. He was around a lot. I mean, towards the end, he'd have to go and, like, sort of edit and stuff because they had deadlines coming up. But Mike was around all day, every day, very, very engaged, always there. I mean, he loved the show. It's one of his favorite things he's ever worked on. And, you know, we found out Monday that we got picked up, so we all sort of went out, like Mike, the whole cast, everybody kind of went out to a bar, and they were talking about ideas they have for season two. And, I mean, you know, Mike is, he's a private guy, but he loves the show, and he loves that people love it. Like, he, other than King of the Hill, it's been so, you know, like Office Space and Idiocracy are these comedy classics, but people didn't find them until, you know, years later.
Right.
So it's cool like getting some eyes on his stuff while it actually can make a difference.
No, that's really cool. And do you guys shoot in California, or do you shoot in Austin?
No, he's moved here. He lives in L.A. now.
Oh, he moved to L.A.? Wow. I never thought he'd
do that. Yeah, that surprises me to hear.
Man, see, this is why I wish he would do interviews, because I would love – that is the number one question on my Mike Judge list now, is why would you move to L.A.? Man, all right. Well,
he's
good.
Working on this show, you know?
Oh, no, but I mean, outside of the show, I mean, if I could do what Mike Judge was doing all those years with King of the Hill, Extract, Idiocracy, Office Space, where you could live in Austin and go make a movie or go make a TV show in L.A. every couple months or whatever, man, that's the dream. I don't know about moving to L.A. That blows my mind.
Well, I just can't picture him as somebody who just strikes me as he hates the machinery of Hollywood so much.
Well, the weed is better in L.A.
But yeah, there's that.
The week is better than Austin, so I'm sure that doesn't hurt. Well, this is exciting, brother. I'm so glad you came on to do the show. I'm trying to think if I have any last second things for you, because I always do this and I'll forget. And
I know,
I
always
forget. Myself in the face later.
I know.
But I got to tell you, brother, I really enjoyed talking, and I hope you come on this fall to promote your show you got going on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
One of your other 30.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah. I'd love to.
Or Portlandia, whatever. I'll call Dan Pasternak. I'll say, Pass, put on Camille. We need to talk to Portlandia. Whatever.
We'll just call up Camille and
Portlandia will be probably January. I'll come on for both.
All right, great. Because I really enjoyed talking to you, brother. And our next guest coming on, I don't know if you want to stay for a minute and say hello, because our next guest coming on, he wrote the film Bad Johnson. And I know he's a big fan of yours as well.
Oh, I'll say hi to all my friends in that movie.
Yeah, which friend of yours is in the movie?
Nick Thune.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Nick Thune's in the movie. Yeah, that is correct. And he's very good in it. I really enjoy this movie. I'm going to call Jeff right now.
All right.
Okay, there's a ring. Ring once. Two rings.
Hello?
Jeff? Yes. Matthew Aaron.
What's up, man? Hey.
What's going on? I want you to say hi to Camille. Let Camille go.
Okay. Hey, Camille. Nice to meet you, man.
Hey, how's it going, man? Nice to meet you.
What's going on, man? I'm trying to figure out.
I did it all.
There we go.
I did it all. There it is.
Right.
We go. Camille. Pleasure. I'm actually writing a role for Camille right now, so.
Are you writing?
Oh,
are you
nice.
Writing a good role?
Well, it's... it's a good role. It's not a human penis, but it's something meaty. It's tailor-made for you, so hopefully we can get it to you when it's ready.
There you
I'm
go.
I'm excited to read it, man. Thank you. I'm flattered. Thank you.
I'm fucking flattered, man.
Yeah, I am getting 10% for this. Yeah, this is coming in the mail.
Yeah.
You are. Shit. I hope WME's not listening.
Kamel, thank you so much for joining us, brother.
Thanks for having me, guys. Nice talking to you guys.
Oh, it's the best.
Thank you.
Nice meeting you, man.
Talk to you later.
Right.
All right, Jeff Tatro, we got to talk to you, brother, because Bad Johnson in theaters May 2nd. Is that the correct date on that? I think I'm right, right?
It is. It is if you can actually find a fucking theater near you that it's playing in.
Well, you could VOD it right now, too. You could catch it on, like, all those apps and on the TV and the Comcast and all that nonsense. It's a funny movie, dude. And Camille was just talking about his friend Nick Thune, who's in the movie. He's great. He plays Rich's penis. And I've confused all our listeners. They're like, what? He plays who's a what? Why don't you could probably sell it better than I can. Why don't you tell people what this film's about?
I mean, it's like he's not a tiny penis attached to a guy. It's essentially about a womanizer who, you know, he can't keep his dick in his pants, and, you know, he's just a serial cheater, and, you know, he gives him the temptation, and he doesn't want to take accountability for it. So, you know, after his latest failed relationship with Jamie Chung, he gets drunk, and he wishes he doesn't have a penis, and he wakes up without a dick. You know, he goes, you know, morning ritual, he shuffles to the bathroom to take a piss.
This is going to be your life, Anthony. If you keep watching hours of porn a day, you're going to lose your dick.
He's not going to wish his dick is just going to separate itself from his body, like a trial separation.
That's true.
I'm sure my penis would love to divorce me for a little while. So
yeah, Jeff, you're crazy to me. This is a crazy story. Your story by far is the best story that I've heard in years at being out in L.A.
Oh, man,
let's talk about this. All right, you move out. you got like a twin air mattress, and you're in your car, and you drive to L.A., which is insane. Did you have a place at least? Did you rent? What? How did this start?
I had my boy Alex Wolf, he had a internship at Screen Gems in the summer of 2007, and he was like, look, I'm going out to L.A. for a few months. You want to come room with me? And I was like, all right. You know, I wasn't doing anything. I was like living in Nashville, working at Costco, and I'd gone back to visit Northern Virginia where I grew up. And I'm like, sure, you know, just decide to wing it. And you know, we found this place off Craigslist after, you know, inquiring like hundreds of people who wanted us to come meet. And we're like, we're in Virginia. We can't do that. But some like weird yoga master, you know, took a chance on us. And we just flew to LAX and took like a $60, $70 cab ride to like the Mid-Wilshire area. And we showed up not having met the guy. And of course, he lied about the apartment. Like, all the pictures, you know, he showed us of where we'd be staying were pictures of the common area. He didn't show us, like, the little closet room we'd be sharing, you know. So, Alex and I, over that summer, we had, just totally came down to, like, some survival of the fittest. Like, we hated each other at the end of the summer.
Oh, I bet, because that's a major bonding time in a room that small.
Oh, man, and no AC, and just two sweaty guys. And
no lunch for food. You looked at him one day, and he, like, turned into a hot dog, like, because you were so hungry.
We'd go days without fucking speaking to each other, and, like, and it didn't help that the bathroom at the place was, and I have experience with toilets, you know, because, you know, I eat a lot of protein, so, it's like, I can look at a toilet usually and be like, yeah, that's not going to work. So, like, the whole first month there, I wouldn't go. I wouldn't risk it. And so I kept a log of all the bathrooms I visited around town to relieve myself. A log, yes, exactly. Well put.
Charles, you ready for that bungalow? Bungalow, Charles.
Yeah, okay.
Come on, it'll be a bigger room than this one, I promise. Here's the thing. Maybe I'm just a pervert, but the first thing I think of when I hear, like, two dudes share the same room and it was, like, the size of a closet is, how do you fuck? How do you jerk off? Where do you watch your porn? Like, I lose my mind. I'm like, I would go nuts.
And it definitely, you got to get creative, you know. I usually opted for the pretend to go to the bathroom, turn the fan on, you know, and you know. And this was before, like, cell phone, like iPhone. Like, you'd have to, like, Alex would go into the bathroom. He'd take his whole fucking laptop in there. And I'm like, oh, he's going to go jack off. But you'd have to get it in, though. You'd have to strategize because, you know, it was like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know. It's like the final scene where he's trying to get home and, you know, beat his parents home. That's why I was jacking off. I was, you know, I'd get done to whatever I had, and I'd check the time and be like, oh, shit, Alex will be home in, you know, whatever amount of time. I've got to get one out before that. So, and that's when you can't enjoy it. That's when you just have to do it. Because, I mean, I'm used to, like, sitting back, and I'm like a conductor with this shit, you know? It's like, I pull up different windows. I'm like, Asians, Blacks, BBW, all this stuff, you know? And then you got to find that one, you know, perfect scene to come to, you know? You're the crescendo.
Yeah. Right.
I'm wasting hours. It's it's just, you know, you gotta get it done, and you know, like, I have to dance tonight, and I'm like on a 2 to 3 day frequency, and when I dance, I regulate how much I do it, so that I'm able to, you know, get the blood down there and earn some tips.
Okay, but this is the craziness. See, this is where it gets even crazier. I want to get to this part when we move along here. But I know you had a bunch of odd jobs when you moved to L.A. I love the blog that you were posting about the Equinox the other day, which, by the way, I fucking hate that place. But another time. It's the worst.
I liked them when they gave me a free week trial. That's when I loved the Equinox. And I lied and said that I was going to join.
Yeah, right.
Just so I could use the gym.
And let me
just
ask
so you could go, yeah.
Yeah, shower.
Shower. I literally did want to use the shower and their Q-tips.
did you write Bad Johnson when you were working at Equinox? Is that why these guys are trainers in the gym?
Well, it's like I just come from a gym. I come from a gym background, and you know, I like to. I keep a log of, like, for writing. I keep like a little text file of jobs for movies, because every time you watch a movie, someone's always like a fucking advertising executive or a party planner or some shit, you know. So it's like, I try to think of good cinematic jobs, and you know. So coming from a gym background, some kind of a meathead, you know, slightly, it just made sense, because essentially the protagonist Rich is learning how to train himself to be a better person. So, you know, if you want to get smart with it, the subtext of a dick movie.
That's how bros talk at the gym. That's all I was going to say. I'm at the gym all the time. That's how they all talk.
And that's just like PG bro talk. Like, it's, I get filthy. We actually had to tone back some of the stuff in the script just for budget purposes and for wrongness purposes. I had a great AIDS joke we had to cut.
Oh, man.
Not a good AIDS
joke. I love a good AIDS joke.
It's where he's fighting with his penis, he threatens to go out and catch AIDS, and he says, I'm going to go catch AIDS, like 80s style AIDS, dead in a week, you know, and that got cut.
Great. That's great. I was telling Chuck,
yeah,
I'm like, Chuck, the preview, because he goes, I saw the preview, and Chuck was thinking it was kind of like weird, and I'm like, the preview doesn't do the film justice, because it's filthy. It's filthy, and like, the preview should just sell you on one thing: this guy's penis comes to life. After that, just watch the movie.
Right, and that's what trailers are supposed to do, and that's what I liked about the trailers. It sold the concept, it kind of sold the tone, but it really didn't give shit away by way of story or just any of the good parts. And, you know, it was kind of bothersome, too, at the same time, because you know what's in the movie, and you know that the trailer doesn't, I mean, necessarily do it justice, but it just really teases it. So, you know, I really wanted people to see the movie to be like, oh, hey, it's not just another dumb fucking Hollywood comedy, you know, where people just get kicked in the nuts the whole time.
Right. Well, I thought, I especially think the opening 10 minutes of this movie are really great. The Jamie Chung scene where I'm not giving too much away, but at about the 15-minute mark, they break up. And and it's like this, because it's in the trailer, too. But, I mean, that scene is great. Like, it is so funny.
Thank you.
Down to the end of the scene, which I thought was great. This whole movie, I just think, is like, it's one of those concepts you hear, and you're kind of shocked it's never been done, because it's like kind of Hollywood, like some guy's penis comes to life. That's
right.
A Hollywood story. That's Freaky Friday.
You can do that pitch in like a second, you know,
right.
I think, for the
people. Oh, man. That's what's funny, because when we were taking it around, and the manager I signed with, like, he was like, this is great. The penis is Vince Vaughn. The guy is Owen Wilson. I'm like, oh, shit, man. I was like, Hollywood really acts like this.
Yeah, they do. That's exactly how Hollywood acts like that. So you took this script in the meetings. We'll get back to your getting in the business story, but I'm assuming you took this script in the meetings. And I was trying to tell Chuck, actually, like last week, how meetings go in L.A. a little bit. And I'm assuming you took the script in the meetings, and they were like, either the Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson thing, or they're like, this script's amazing. What else do you got? We could never make a movie about a man whose penis came to life.
Yeah, it was the latter, and I was, you know, shocked, as weird as it sounds, but, I mean, the script spread around town pretty fast, and, you know, I went from being this desk clerk at Equinox. You know, I'd gotten fired from Equinox, actually, and right around the time, or right before the script spread around town, and you'd go in, and you'd meet with these creative executives, which, you know, God bless them and God damn them, but, it was frustrating. I remember my first meeting, and I went in, and they're like, we love the script. It's really funny. I'm like, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, awesome, man. If we can, you know, you can make this movie for under $5 million, it's original. And they're like, yeah, but we don't really want to make it. We do have some notes for you, though. And this one executive, I mean, God, I this is when I realized, like, holy shit, these horror stories about Hollywood are true. He's like, I want to know what the penis's hopes and dreams are. Like, does he want to be the president? You know, and like, are you fucking kidding?
The penis is not a dynamic enough character. It's a static character. I want a dynamic character.
Yeah, dude,
penis.
It's a cock.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the penis's arc? I'm like, well, he kind of has a slight up curve when he's fully hard. You know. So.
Yeah.
That's great. So, all right. So you're at the gym. You got all these odd jobs. What other odd jobs did you have? I'm sure you had a few.
Man, I was, at the Equinox, I got that job on purpose just because I knew the clientele that'd be coming in. And I, you know, it was a strategic thing for me because it gave me a chance to see certain Hollywood players on a consistent basis and not as a fucking barista, you know. And plus, I got the free membership, you know. So that was good, and that's where I met Danny Roman, the producer. But I, you know, from Equinox, I was doing, like, training on the side, and I fucking hate personal training, and I have very little respect for personal trainers. You know, like, one out of maybe 50 knows what the fuck they're doing, which is why we take a few digs at them in the movie, you know, because I look like a fitness douchebag, but I don't like working out. I hate that world, and, you know, I drag myself to the gym because I just want to look sexy, as dickish as that sounds. But, you know, I was a trainer, and then I was a doorman at this place, Katana, across from Skybar, which is just this, it's been on the decline for a few years now.
You were there, it was hot.
No, it was still, you know, that's the thing about L.A., things are only hot for, like, you know, a few months. I mean, restaurant Katana was hot for a few years prior to that, but right when I came in, you know, it was just, the crowd got seedy, you know. It went from being, like, classic crowd, then you get, like, the Beverly Hills crew, you know the stereotypes associated with Beverly Hills. They'd be busting themselves in their Bentleys with their attitudes, and then you'd get the rappers and the athletes, and so it was, like, Beverly Hills, you know, and then, you know, kind of the urban crowd, and it was a crazy mix. And so I dealt with a lot of scenarios there, and me being a doorman, you know, I was expected to defuse certain situations, and I'm like, shit, I can't handle this. Because one night we had Suge Knight try to come in. I'm like, holy shit, it's the guy who killed Tupac. And I'm down at the ropes, and he's blackballed from the place, and management's like, turn him away. I'm like, I'm going to turn Tupac's murderer away.
So you were assigned to turn away Suge Knight? How'd that work out?
Oh, man. He pulled the race card in a half a second. He was like, it's because I'm black, right? I'm like, no.
Yeah. It's
because you're Shook fucking Knight.
Fucking murderer.
Holy shit, dude. It was like, holy shit. You know, and me being just like a white suburban kid from Virginia who, like, I was in middle school, like, right around the time, like, All Eyes on Me was out and Ready to Die. And, you know, I'm more of a Biggie guy than a Tupac guy, but it was surreal. I was like, holy shit. You know, I used to smoke shitty weed out of Coke can bowls listening, you know, to Death Row stuff. And here I am face to face with it.
Yeah.
So did you ever valet? Did you ever learn that no one tips in L.A.?
Oh, man. I've never valeted. I've seen how it is. I've pulled tricks on valets, you know, where you fold up the dollar to make it look like it's more, and then you get the fuck out before your guilt can catch up with you. And it's funny because
my friends and I, we would go to, like, you know, we'd go to Beverly Hills Hotel. We would go there.
Yeah.
Lee and I would go out all the
time.
And I would tip, like, to the valet. I'd tip him, like, $5. Because in Chicago, you tip the valet guy probably around $3 to $5.
Yeah.
And this valet looks at me. And this is a Beverly Hills fucking hotel. Brunei fucking owns this place, okay?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Fucking chic, okay? And he
These are
goes,
people who don't go to the Four Seasons because it's too shabby.
Right. He goes, do you want change? And I go, no, five's good, man. It's for you. And he goes, what? And I'm like, what do you mean what? Like, you? He's like, no, nothing. And I realized, and my buddy gave him five, too, and this guy, like, shit his pants. And I realized,
yeah.
These guys don't get fucking tipped.
Yeah.
They get, like, a dollar.
Yeah.
Well, it's because this scene is, like, this underclass here, and it is much as this town likes to preach and talk about equality, it's so hypocritical because, you know, they wouldn't even look guys like that in their fucking eyes. And, like, you know, me being a doorman, I experienced that, you know, is that's why I got fired from Katana, too. I got the firing report hanging here framed in the apartment, you know, because I'm proud of why I got fired. And it's just that's, you know, in my L.A. journey, I've learned, you know, just you never know who you're going to meet. Just be a good person. You know, so many people are fucking dickheads for no reason because they, you know, it's disgusting to me.
All right. Now I'm going to throw our audience totally for a loop. This guy's story is crazy, right? All right. Now you're a go-go dancer dancing at like gay bars. And you're a straight guy.
Yeah.
And you're a straight guy.
I am.
Now, it's before or after your first script got bought?
Dude, this was actually last year I started dancing. So it's, you know,
started
afterwards. Yes, because, you know, when you don't become a superstar when you sell a screenplay, contrary to what, you know, you think and what everyone else thinks, you know, it's not Entourage out here. Mm-mm. It's and especially the way the business is now, like everyone, especially writers, everyone's getting lowballed on scripts and they want free work. And it's just, you can make more money working for fucking UPS or something than, you know, selling your first screenplay.
Mm-hmm. I just probably did about $45,000 worth of free work. I've talked about this with my friends. I mean, I am getting paid for stuff, but it's like for one of the things I'm getting paid for, I had to do $45,000 of free work, according
That's
to
ridiculous.
Writers Guild rules. According to Writers Guild rules. Now, people don't seem to follow those too well because I'm not Aaron Sorkin. So no, but
right.
That's what people think, and what people don't understand is unless you're the Aaron Sorkin to the world, the Writers Guild does very little for you.
Right.
It's just the truth. I mean,
they'll collect your dues.
No, right. They'll collect your dues, and you'll get your free movies and your discount at Universal Studios.
You'll get your screeners, and
right. But the truth,
you'll
is
get shit you can post on Instagram to make other LA people feel like shit. That's
right. Yeah. In 2008, we had a writer's strike at the Writers Guild. Now, I wasn't in the guild at this
that
time.
Hurt
but
all of us.
Here's the story of how it ended. None of the writers wanted to end the strike. Aaron Sorkin held a private meeting at his house one night with only, like, the top, like, 10 screenwriters in town. They decided to end the strike, and that's how the strike ended. Because when Aaron Sorkin and his boys say the strike's over, it's over, baby. And that was it.
I didn't know that. And you know what?
Now you do.
Good for it. It shouldn't have happened because it hurt us, and now, I mean, it just made everyone realize, like, oh, hey, you know, look at all, reality TV is everywhere now, and I think the strike contributed to that. And, I mean, then you look, John Ridley just won a screenplay, or won an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave, and he's blackballed from the Writers Guild. The South Park guys, who I would fucking, you know, pre-com all of myself, I ever met them, like, I have immense respect for them and what they do. They're not Writers Guild, you know, and I mean, honestly, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this. I have a movie made, I have a screenplay sold. I'm still technically not Writers Guild. I still haven't qualified for it. So.
I just qualified for it, and I'm not sure if I'm going to join or not, honestly.
Yeah,
I'm not sold on, like, the point.
No.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's cheap. It's like $2,500 a year, so you're kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, well, whatever. It's $2,500. It's like the
you
Soho.
You need that money,
like
first of all.
It's like the Soho house.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'm like, wait,
yeah.
I could do some things with $2,500.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't need that card to flash around to, like, impress girls in bars and stuff like that, you know? And that's why I feel like a lot of people get it or join it as a bragging point, you know, or just
so,
I hear it.
Yeah.
I don't.
You gotta remember something, Jeff. I'm not saying this. And by the way, no homo on this. That's how they say it in my neck of the woods.
Yep.
But
yep,
you're a really good looking guy. You're a really
interesting. Oh, thanks, man.
Okay, but this is true. Most writers, they don't look like you. So they may need that card as a bragging
some of
point.
Them.
They may need that card to pick up women. I love how you're playing porn and showing me a picture of Aaron Sorkin at the same time, double screen. You have porn going and Aaron Sorkin.
I heard porn, and I thought you were talking about me. I was like, damn, you're like an X-Men. You know
no,
what
no,
I'm
my,
doing.
My film producer, the producer, not even for my podcast, for my film that we're doing now, is watching porn.
Usually,
and he has a picture of Aaron
can
Sorkin.
Can I tell you
so? Multitasking.
Our producer, usually, when people have
he's going to get his wires crossed, he's going to end up fucking coming to Aaron Sorkin, so he needs to be
right.
careful.
You get a boner to Aaron Sorkin on that.
The Sorkin boner.
So what I was talking about,
I don't even remember
what
we were talking about.
No, we were talking about most writers, though. This leads into what I was going to talk about with Jeff is most writers don't have like good bodies and like look good and whatever.
No,
I'm probably one of the few writers that works out. Okay,
yeah.
So I mean, the fact of the matter is, there's this automatic pretension with like you don't look like us, so you're not in the club.
Right. If you don't fit the image of the mousy, cloistered, stymied intellectual writer that America is so heartening for some reason.
I met an A-list director once. This is to prove Lee's point correct. And I'm not going to say who it was, but I will tell you this. We were talking about Eli Roth, who I like a lot and who's done the show. And
I want to get fucked up with him, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I know you do. And Eli's in good shape like Jeff. And this director hates Eli. And when I asked him why. I asked him, why don't you like Eli? He didn't have a reason, which led me to believe he just doesn't like Eli because his
he's a
shit
jock.
Don't stink.
Yeah.
And he's in good shape and all the pussy in the world wants him.
Yeah.
I mean, listen.
Right.
I know a lot of comedians who are like that about Dane Cook because
right.
Dane Cook looks like a jock.
Yeah.
But I'm like, for that
yeah.
reason.
Yes. I know that to be true, too.
Yes.
Absolutely. So Jeff has not only become a successful screenwriter, okay? He's go-go.
For the moment.
Hey, listen, brother, it'll continue. You can knock on wood all you want, but I got faith.
Yeah.
He's go-go dancing for gay men
when
because it supplements the income.
Let me say, when I heard that, a straight guy go-go dancing for gays, and it means he probably makes a really good amount of money. Shit, I wish I thought of that.
I'm glad we're talking about this after tax season. It's inconsistent, you know. You can never rely. I mean, you get a base rate that you know you get a 1099 for, which is really all you can rely on because it's certain nights, you know, you do well, and other nights you just feel like the biggest loser in the world. And you know, it's a dollar is like go-go oxygen. Like tips are like go-go oxygen. You know, and it's like when you don't get that. You know, I would rather get like a dollar every few minutes than like just a cluster of dollars at once and then wait 15 minutes because, you know, it gets inside your head and you start to wonder and, you know, then you're dancing, you know, next to Little Twinks or these Latin boys and they're getting the money and then, you know, me, I live inside my head. So you're sitting there wondering, it's like, Do I look fat? You know, and dancing for men has really, really made me hyper aware of my body and very self-conscious. Like, I didn't realize I didn't have an ass until I started dancing. Where it's like, you know, you see me.
Do they tell you?
Oh, yeah, man. It's like, I'll be out there, I'll be like oiled up and like glistening and you know, just muscular, and I'll have like a big bulge going on. And then the first thing they'll be like, you don't have an ass. And I was like, out of all of this, you see that I don't have an ass, you know?
Now, it's funny because this is the complete opposite of the straight community. Because, like, when Chuck and I go to strip clubs, it could be the ugliest stripper ever. We're still nice to her. We don't say, oh, you're kind of fat, sweetheart.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever been mean to a stripper, Chucky?
No, because I don't want the bouncer to come kick my ass.
Well, that's the other thing. These are men go-go dancing, so they just figure men can take care of themselves and stuff. They have bouncers at the clubs in L.A. and WeHo, but, like, they don't really do much.
No, they're just...
they don't do anything.
That's for me.
Exactly.
Yeah. They're there to push the...
Well, and this is the thing about go-go is like a stripping loophole where you're not technically stripping and, you know, you're dancing at a bar, so, like, stripping rules don't apply. So, like, these guys, they'll exploit that. Yeah, I mean, the ABC has been cracking down in West Hollywood, so when I first started last year, it was dirtier. Like, you'd see motherfuckers getting, like, jacked off and shit like that in, like, dirty corners. And now, I mean, it's cleaned up a lot just because of, like, the pressure applied by the government, but... It's hurt tips for the Latin boys. I mean,
I know the Latin boys will do anything. I trust me. I've spent
Hispanic gay guys are the gayest people of all.
We will take.
They are.
I don't know. I think the Filipinos will give them a run for their money. Like, I'm not. They're neck and neck.
Jeff, how funny is it though? All these Latin guys that'll tell people they're straight when they're obviously gay, and they're like go-go dancers. They're like. And they say to you, they're like, no, I'm straight, blah, blah, blah.
I'm totally.
But they do it in, like, that really gay, like, Latino stereotype voice.
Yeah.
Man, I know. I see it all the time. And I'm like, okay, fine. There's a guy who dances at the Abbey who's just so feminine. And he's, like, declaring his heteroness. I'm like, all right, man. Okay, cool story.
Is he Latin, though, too?
That's part of the show.
Because it's like a Latin
thing. Oh, this guy's white, but, I mean, this guy's white, and he's like...
I know exactly who you're talking about, and he tells...
Yeah, I think you do.
Yeah, and he tells everyone...
Yeah, and...
Yes.
It's
and
just...
I
but this is the thing in this town. Well, most guys, they're straight until the price is right, and that's what I'm proud of, is, like, I've had some crazy offers thrown my way, and I'd be living like a king... if I entertained a few of them, but I just can't. You know, to me, there's a line that I'm not willing to cross.
What's up, principals in Hollywood?
Well, I know, right? It's unheard of.
Lee, it's
like... I had a couple offer me $10,000 to blow me, and everyone told me I should have done it. I couldn't do it, you know? I couldn't.
Wow.
I was telling Lee, wow. Lee, how many times do I come home? When I was casting this movie I was doing, and I got advice from David Gordon Green and a couple other people that said, listen, cast unknowns, cast people that aren't even actors, cast real people that are interesting. And I go, okay, great advice. And I would go to the Abbey, and I would go to, what was the other club I go to? I don't even remember. Maybe it was a Mickey's or something. And I would meet some guys there, and we would prearrange to meet there in their neck of the woods, and I would interview them for this kind of stuff, and I would end up spending the night, like, down in that area and just hanging out and getting a feel for the scene and stuff, and I would come home and tell Lee about this, and I don't know if any of it blew Lee's mind.
It did.
But this is kind of like you're confirming all that.
Yeah.
And the Brian Singer story last week.
Yeah.
Which I've been outraged about that shit.
He got caught on list number 20, item 20 on the list of shit.
Lee can confirm this. I could not cast anybody in my movie from West Hollywood because people would walk up to me and they would say, how do I know you're not like Brian Singer? How do I know you're not like this guy? How do I know you're not like that guy?
Yeah.
And it would drive me nuts. I would go home. I go, Lee, I met this guy. He's perfect for the role. He won't do it because he thinks I'm like so-and-so.
Yeah,
and Lee would be like, motherfucker.
Motherfucker.
Because forget that these guys, their dreams and their hopes and everything have been, like, broken.
Been broken.
Jeff's in, like, the heart of that scene and succeeding, which is, like, crazy for me.
Yeah.
The other thing that Lee brought up that I thought was interesting is, do you think you get paid more because you're a straight guy at go-go dancing or less?
No, it actually hurts, contrary to popular belief. You know, I've been called names and stuff before because I'm straight. You know, it's almost like a reverse discrimination sometimes, which I'm not saying that it's commonplace, but it's happened where guys find out I'm straight and they refuse to tip, or, you know, and sometimes I don't like to even talk about it. I try to change the subject. You know, I've gotten really good at declining people, but still coming across as endearing, you know, which is a skill. But sometimes, you know, you tell a gay guy who's straight is like telling a kid there's no Santa Claus, you know, the way some reactions I've seen.
Do you ever get any great ideas for scripts for when you're working?
Man, I'm always writing down dialogue on my phone. I'm always writing down, like, you see a lot of stuff, images, like, I'm always, like, I just keep track. I'm compiling stuff. I think the go-go scene would make a great TV show for, like, HBO or Showtime or something. It's just, West Hollywood's such a strong community, and it's the characters that are there, and it's just such a ripe opportunity, you know, and it hasn't been done yet, and it's just so cinematic, too.
There's an opportunity, and I know that's the way you've been thinking about it. I know the way I always thought about it was, that could be a sitcom. Like, you could legitimately, there's some funny shit that goes on at those places. And I think you're so entrenched in it that maybe it's not as funny to you as it is to a guy like me that goes there and sees this shit.
Yeah.
But, like, as, like, an outsider looking in, I'm like, some of this shit's fucking funny.
Right. It is. I'd see it more as like a comedy drama and stuff. Because, you know, you run across some classic tragic characters. You know, I have a friend who's, you know, recovering from and trying to get clean, and he's going to get himself back on his feet. And then you have, like, the fading drag queens competing with the younger drag queens. And then, you know, you have, like, the go-go celebrities who, you know, think they're hot shit, you know, who in 2 years, like, there'll be another guy who's come along who's just eclipsed him. And then you have, like, the crew of popular, like, Abby kids who act like, you know, they're mean girls, and they try to emulate that behavior. And it's just, there's so much going on. And as someone like me, who, my mind's always just on hyperdrive, you know, I just try to soak as much of it in as I can and keep track of it. Because I really do, you know, as much as I observe, I have a respect for all of that. But also, you know, you can laugh at a lot of the stuff, you know, like the purple dicks you see at the end of the night, from the double twisted cock rings that the smaller endowed guys wear to compete with the larger guys and everything like that. It's funny, but it's also sad.
I think everyone's table needs those double cock rings. Do we need two a piece?
Yeah.
Guys have their systems, yeah. Guys have their system. I tried double twisting before, but you know what? And this is what I say is, like, you know, dancing with a hard on is just tacking. It's like, it's just stiff and floppy is fun. You know, you get enough blood down there, you strap on the cock ring. Cock rings aren't magic. They won't keep you hard. You know, they'll just help delay the blood flow. And you just go out there, you flop around, you drink, and you know, people tip you.
Yeah.
Chucky, if I told you, Chuck, that you could make $700 a week dancing naked for men, yes or no?
Right now, the way my body looks, I would say that's impossible.
See, he's already self-conscious. It's not impossible, because you know what?
Jeff, not I only do have something to flop.
I have a
No, it's not. Right. But this is the beauty about the community, too, is, like, there's so many just different, like, cliques and things people like, you know? So it's like, I dance.
I'm a cub.
A cub, yeah. You do the cub dancing in Silver Lake.
This is exactly that, and that's what I'm going to be on this Friday. I'll be there Friday at the Eagle.
See?
Yeah, and it's I have a funny story about that. It's like, I've noticed, too, like, when I was dancing last year, I wasn't as lean as I am now. I would clean up dancing at the Eagle. And now that I've, you know, gotten a lot leaner, my tips have taken a hit dancing for the Bears, you know?
Hey, well, I could probably clean up there. I bet.
Yeah.
I could
clean up. You dance for the bands. You go down to Long Beach. Dance for my boy Richard. You know.
What? I think maybe one time I'm gonna go dance, but I'm gonna wait until a movie comes out or something. That'll be my way of promoting.
Yeah. Wait, so that like when you
cross promote it,
you're not like. Oh, what did I just do? You can be like, well, I've got that other thing that I'm doing.
Yeah. Has anyone come up to you yet and told you they've seen Bad Johnson and blah, 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 what, like while you're on the job? Or even like, I find that would be more awkward than like, obviously, people are calling you up and telling you how funny it is.
No, it's like, I'm glad you guys find it funny. Thank you. I appreciate that. But, It's. I've had some guys say or come up. They're like, "Oh, I heard about your movie and stuff like that." But usually, it's kind of as an in for them to try to, I'll be like standing there on break, like having a drink, smoking a cigarette, and they'll come and be like, "Oh, I heard about your movie," and then you feel like their fingers like creeping up towards your armpit, you know.
Yeah, real cinema buffs.
Yeah, right. There.
It's like, yeah, I don't feel you trying to get my sweat on your fingers, man.
So what is like? God. So you work days and you work night. So what's like the day job like? You other than writing, what do you have to do? Like meetings all the time and shit, or what?
No, man. Sometimes you get a meeting, which, you know, it's fine. I'll take any meeting, you know, because I just found in this town you never know who can help you. And if you can get meetings in this town, you know, you should consider yourself fortunate. But during the day, typical day for me, like tonight I got to go dance. I'll probably be done around 1, you know, I'll probably be in bed by 3, up by 11 tomorrow. You go to the gym, you know, you take care of the bullshit. Like this is the thing too, like I write more at night, you know, it's hard for me to write during the day, days for like errands, you know, all that bullshit and decompressing and, you know, and plus, you know, I drink when I write, like I feel like most writers do, and I just feel like a piece of shit if I pour a drink during the day, you know, so usually it doesn't start till 7. So I've been balancing my time between dancing nights and writing, but this is the thing, too, it's healthy because when you have a limited amount of time and you have to split it, you appreciate your free time that much more, and it forces you to work harder. And now that my old roommate has moved out, he took DirecTV with him, I don't have TV to fuck with me anymore. So, you know, I'm just, on the nights I don't dance, I'm just, you know, you'll get girls texting you, hey, what are you doing? It's like, I'm writing, you know, and, you know, it's like, I've been trading writing for sex lately, which is as weird as it sounds, but, and then on my other nights, it's, you go out and you dance.
I hear you. It's funny, Lee and I, when we cut out TV, how much more work we got done, too.
That's true.
Remember, when we moved into the new place, I cut out the cable. They kept trying to put it in, too. They're like, are we building you TV? I'm like, no.
No.
We got so much work done.
Yeah.
Outside of, like, my 3 a.m., 4 a.m. booty calls. But
It's healthy, and you know, it is like this. Is what I tell people is like Shakespeare never had Facebook and internet porn. You know, it's like he had a candle and fucking like a limited amount of like quail's blood for his, you know, pen. You know, you gotta fucking make it count.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. What I was going to ask you is Bad Johnson, this is kind of it's an indie film, right? Because I know a lot of people that even worked on like crew wise and stuff.
Yeah, it was Chicago movie.
Yeah, Chicago film. Yeah, that's where we're shooting our film. By the way, I'm like looking at some of this, and I'm like, man, indie film, but expensive indie film. It looks really good.
Yeah.
Like, it looks really good.
Yeah, you know.
And not that my crew's not doing a bang-up job, but I mean, like, I'm watching this, and I'm like, this looks like a studio movie. So, congrats.
Dude, I appreciate that. Thank you. And I don't think I'm allowed to talk about the budget, but it's a lot lower than you think it'd be. It helps that the producers are based out of Chicago. And, you know, we got a lot of bang for our buck on the film. And the fact that we were able to get Cam and Jamie and Nick, and then great Chicago actors like Kevin Miller, who fucking crushed it, who I hope he blows up. And Catherine Cunningham, fucking sweetheart.
There's a lot of good actors in the film, I'm glad it got shot here. I love seeing indie movies here. I mean, I want to make all my movies here. I've even told you that. I'm like, I love L.A. And I'm with you, brother. I need the sunshine, too. I get it. I love L.A., but I'd rather work in Chicago, as weird as that sounds. Things are just – I think if I had your body and I could dance, like, and distract myself from all the Hollywood bullshit, I'd like L.A. even more. But if I'm just out there for Hollywood bullshit, it moves too slow for me, man.
Yeah.
It moves too slow for me. Yeah. I want to work out.
Yeah, and I was listening to you guys earlier before Kumal, or when Kumal was on, and you were just talking about how people come out here and they don't do shit, you know, and they just sit around and smoke weed, and I see it all the time. You know, I live, like, right just, like, Sunset La Brea area, which is, like, it's a lot of army and gang activity, but it's also a lot of, you know, struggling, starving actor types, you know, people from Iowa and Kansas or whatever move out here to chase their Hollywood dreams, and you see it, and, you know, people come out here and they expect fame to fall in their lap, and they don't work, or they'll go out and they'll party, or they'll be like, I'll go, you know, audition tomorrow, and they don't take it seriously. They just think it's going to happen for them, and then, you know, fast forward 6 months later, they're moving back to fucking Nebraska to pop out kids and go to a high school football games for the same school they went to.
Yep. And this is the point I was making, too. Earlier today, I told Chuck. Chuck's like, I don't know if I'm going to come by. I got allergies. And I literally said to you, there's no excuses in Hollywood, Charles. Minus Jewish, Christian, Hallmark holidays, five-day weekend, award show season, January through March, AIDS, and summer. I forgot summer.
Yeah.
Outside of that, there are no excuses for not working.
I came.
I know. But that's how Lee and I feel about L.A. is it's like they take 8 months off a year if you add up all the days.
Right.
And then we're only really working like 120 days a year. I'm fucking bored.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's like if you let like elementary school kids determine what the teacher work days would be with no limit. You know, it's like, oh hey, we get to go to school like 2 days a year.
Right. And I'm gonna tell you, this is straight up, and this is I'm not insulting anyone that I'm working for, whatever, blah blah blah. But a deal I made with a company took like 6 months, 7 months.
Which is average.
You know what my people tell me, the agents, the lawyers, everything, they go, yeah, that's average.
Yeah.
That's how long they take to make deals. I go,
takes
oh.
Takes fucking ever.
Yeah, I'm from fucking Chicago, man. It takes place like tomorrow. Unlike,
we do it over
coffee. Let's do it. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of ironic that a town that's, you know, pretty much predicated on youth spends so much time getting their shit together, you know? It's like, oh, hey, it doesn't make sense. And, you know, it's funny because when I sold my script Stepdog to Morgan Creek, which wasn't a big deal, I mean, the money-wise, it was just, it took months to get paid. I went broke that summer.
Waiting,
you know, I was building up a credit card, waiting to get my first check.
I've
called my mom.
Yeah.
My mom's, like, transferring money to my USAA account, you know, so I can get food, you know, and it's like, wow, I just sold the screenplay, you know, so people don't get that, like, they think, oh, Hollywood, he got a movie made, or he sold a script, he's rich, he's famous. It's not like that at all, and, you know, the people see movies coming out all the time, they're like, oh, it's easy to get movies made, because there's new movies coming out every week, it's like, that shit's been in, you know, it took 10 years to get made. That's been, you know, in production for 4 years. It doesn't work like that. And it got to a point where it was embarrassing for me to even talk about, you know, what I was doing out here. Or, you know, because
you're embarrassed of your own shit.
Because it's like this. It's like, oh, you're Jeff Tatro, blah, 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 great, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you just sold a script to Morgan Creek. And then you're like, yeah, I just sold a script. And you're waiting months and months to get paid, right?
Right.
And they're like,
yeah.
And it's like, did I sell a script? Because I haven't gotten paid.
it just crushes you, man. It's like, I, you know, to come out here and, like, within the span of two, I moved out here June 07. Within the span of 2 years, you know, I had a hot script around town. I signed with William Morris Endeavor, which is huge. And I'm getting calls from, like, my dad back home. He's like, well, you know, if you want to move back home, you can do it. Because, you know, that doesn't, just because you make those strides and those creative strides in Hollywood, that doesn't mean that it doesn't translate to money, you know? It's like you're still, you know, even when I go to Chipotle now, I still don't get guacamole unless it's like I have a reason to celebrate because I know what it's like being broke. So having money is like, it's different, you know? And not that I have money, but, you know, the go-going does give me a consistent enough income.
Isn't that crazy, too? You've sold two good script. I mean, I know for one, one's a good script because of Bad Johnson. And then Morgan Creek, that's a big studio. Like, you're figuring...
They're all right, yeah.
they're big enough, right? But you're...
Back in the 90s, they were all right. Yeah, they were good.
But you know people in Virginia where you're from, or like even people in Chicago, they're like, oh, you sold a script to Morgan Creek? You must be a millionaire. And like people hit you up thinking you're rich. Do you get hit up people thinking you're rich because of Bad Johnson? I bet you do. I bet. I get people hitting me up thinking I make money off a podcast, which is
honestly, it's almost the opposite. I'll get people hitting me up. You know, Bad Johnson's a legitimate movie, you know, that's out with, you know, recognizable faces. I get people hitting me up like, oh, hey, let's collaborate on something. I'm like, it's like, I don't mean to, you know, belittle them, but it's like, I'm a professional at this. Like, this is what I do. I don't, you know, no offense, but I don't have time to sit here and help you on your little web short. You know, which makes me sound like an asshole, and I'm sorry, but it's how I feel sometimes. It's almost, or, you know, I don't tell anyone I'm a writer because, you know, you go to a bar and you're talking to a girl and she's like, what do you do? You tell her you're a screenwriter, she's like, oh, I write too, and I model, and I act, and all this shit. And it steals, you know, from your essence.
Yeah, it does.
No,
that's true.
Everyone can
say it undermines your confidence in your own ability.
We've talked about this before, Lee and I have. Yeah. Anyone could say they're a comedian, a screenwriter, an actor. Do you get paid? I always say this at bars, and I look like a dick. I go, oh, you're a professional writer? And they go, well, what do you mean? And I go, well, you get paid. And they're like, well, I just did this thing, this little web show, whatever. And I'm like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. Everyone has a story. Always a story. That's why I shut the fuck up, especially when I'm dancing, too. I get a lot of people coming at me, like, what's your day job? What do you do? And I don't even like talking about that, because if you tell them you're a writer, they just get this, like, sad look in their eye, in their eyes, like, oh, you know, another one of these.
Yeah, that's true. Let's go back, though, with Bad Johnson. Now, when Bad Johnson comes out May 2nd, which people can see in the select theaters, or you can see on video on demand right now, and Cam's great in it, but Nick Thune's great in it. I mean, the whole cast is really good, actually. I mean, now that I think about it, like, everyone's really solid in the movie. And you talked about you took Dirtier Things out and stuff like that, but this is still a pretty filthy movie, but it also is a little sweet, too. Now, is that something you do as a writer because you're like, hey, I want to make money. I got to make a mainstream movie here. I got to have a little romantic angle in this. Or is that something that, like, you just – there's a romantic side to you, Jeff?
there's a romantic side to me. It's hard. You know, I feel like it has to be earned. And, I you show it to a few people. I mean, I've been in love twice, and – I was in a 5-year relationship and a 1-year relationship, and like right now I'm just adamant about being single. But you know, I have a sweet side. I just, most of the time I prefer not to show it, or I don't think it needs to be shown. But you know, when I write, I like to play rough. I like to write stuff, but you know, the love story was always part of it. It just, I mean, the original ending, like, it ends happily, you know. The original ending was fucked up and wrong. Like, he gets his dick back, and you know he's going to cheat again, which I feel is more realistic. But, you know, when you're making a movie, and you got to sell to audiences, and you got to get them to talk, you know, you have to make certain concessions, you know. And I feel like this is...
It's funny you say that. I didn't want to give away the ending without. I was gonna ask you in the future. Let's say there. It's the end of the movie. Let's say after the movie, does this guy cheat?
Oh, I think he does, absolutely. Like, the last line in the first draft was, he was checking out like a beautiful female cop, you know, at the crime scene, and you know, and the last line was, and so it begins again, you know, because.
Right.
My stance on all this is, you know, penis is a powerful figure. You know, it feels like a separate person, which is what inspired me to write it in the first place. And you know, he wields control. You know, you see all these men in power with great jobs and perfect lives, and they're always cheating. And he's like, why are they cheating? Like, it doesn't make sense on paper, but you know, when you're a male and you feel that tug or that whisper in your ear, and you know, it's 4 a.m. and you're drunk. You're like, why don't I just go to bed? And it's like, nah, this chick might want to hang out. You know, it's like, yeah, I'll go drive to her. You know, because you're a fucking idiot. Dude. That's your dick. That's your dick at that point. You become your penis.
Yep. Yeah, I think we've all been there. Chuck, you let your penis control your life sometimes.
Oh, God, absolutely.
You know how many...
No, I'm kidding if my girlfriend's listening.
Yeah, you know how many sleepless nights I've had because I'm like, she's going to text soon. It's coming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And what's funny is there's all that build-up, and then the second you come, you're like, why? Why did I waste this much time? Why did I spend 2 hours jacking off? Why?
You're a grown man.
I'm a man.
Even if the sex is bad, if it's not, like, amazing when you leave, you're like, man, I should have just jerked off. I got to be up in 2 hours. Like, all of a sudden, you're no longer thinking about
sex. I got to move my car. It's street sweeping day.
I got
to
drive to
Louisville. I have a quick story about that. Like, I went to, it was like 2 years ago, this girl who lives in Beverlywood, which is, like, south of Beverly Hills, and it's, like, a very Jewish local community. She called me at like 2:30, and this is like a girl, you know, I've been wanting to hook up with for a while. And she's like, come over. I'm like, fuck yeah. It was like 2:30. I drive over to her apartment, which is like 15 minutes from where I live, you know, and there's no parking anywhere, like even like illegal parking. There's nothing. I drive around for half an hour, and I get on my phone. I call her. I'm like, I got to go home. I can't park anywhere. I got cock-blocked by the parking situation. I drove right back home.
Oh, man. That's awful. Yeah. My favorite, I think I've told this story on the show before. I think my favorite's when I showed up to this broad's house, and she was a casting director. And there was, like, all these headshots on the wall. And I was, like, staring at, like, hot chicks instead while she was eating out my ass.
Yeah.
My L.A. sex experience.
That's great. And who doesn't love a good rim job? I mean, I know guys who are like, oh, man, that's gay. It's like, are you kidding me? And it feels great to have your ass eaten out.
It's awesome. It's amazing. Yeah. Thank you. Someone else who's come on this show and agreed
with good.
Me.
It's good.
Who ate your ass?
Of course.
Oh, stop.
Not in L.A.
Oh, okay. All right.
The dog don't count.
The dog.
Let's be a good rim job while you're just laid back, you're relaxed, you're just... feel it, you know, lapping away like a kid in the milk.
You got a jar of peanut butter, you're okay.
Are you going to ask Guinevere to eat your ass out, Chuck?
I may.
You should.
I'll be single afterwards.
Yeah, a good rim job fixes many things.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's great. Speaking of great rim jobs, that's what Bad Johnson is. It's a great rim job. That's what it is.
I'm proud of it.
I enjoyed it, brother, and you should be proud of it, and you should be pimping the shit out of it until you sell a million more scripts. I mean, I would come to you and say, let's do an indie movie, but we know how you feel about that. look, brother, you got some good stuff on the horizon, and I'm really proud of you. I think you're a great dude, too. You got the funniest Facebook and Twitter on the planet, I'll tell you that. I fucking crack up. I mean, isn't that how you kind of got this movie, by the way? The producer by your Facebook statuses?
Facebook. I met him at Equinox. He added me on Facebook. He liked my updates. He wanted to read my script. And, you know, it's like I'm pretty honest on Facebook. I don't post too much stuff on Twitter. You know, it's like it's only select things. But Facebook, I'm the most honest. But, yeah, you know, it's just I'm a real nice guy, but, you know, when I kind of like to be an asshole on the internet, it's fun. It indulges my Cartman side, so to speak. And I love getting a reaction out of people. My whole life I've liked it. And, you know, that's just me.
He did the one smart thing I didn't do, though. Jeff did one smart thing. I've noticed this. Jeff did not add, like, every gay guy that tried to add him on Facebook. I'm like, oh, the more the merrier.
No.
Yeah,
right.
That's your way of thinking.
My downfall was
trouble.
I said, oh, I'm making a movie about gay guys. I need that gay audience
cracking.
Yeah. I'm going to add everybody. Yes, you're in. You're in.
I understand why you did that,
and it was
though.
All downhill
but
from
it,
there.
Yeah.
Now I hate Facebook. Like, I just post. I'll read Jeff's stuff.
I hate
so
it.
Many people are unfollowed, it's not even funny. If you go to my feed, it's really like Jeff, Food, Chuck, Food, Anthony.
Paul Schrader.
Paul Schrader. Porn.
Yeah.
And then that's like it, because I had to unfollow
that sounds
every
like an ideal Facebook.
Every gay guy I know I have unfollowed.
You were also afraid and wanted to get restraining orders on a few.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I have a friend queue of over, like, 100 guys. Yeah, this is, like, no offense to them, but it's like, you'll see, it's, you know why. I get messages. I call out people sometimes.
Oh,
I've had guys message me.
They want you to come on over. Come hang out.
Yeah, well, a guy I'll meet in a completely nice setting, and I'll be polite and stuff. I'll get a message. He'll find me on Facebook. I'll get a message from me. He's like, when are you going to let me suck that cock? And
yeah,
I'm like, fuck. It's like, that's just rude. That's just bad behavior.
All right, we got 1 minute left. Jeff, anything else you want to say about Bad Johnson, which you can catch on video on demand now, May 2nd in select theaters?
And you're going to be at the Eagle on Friday.
And you're going to be at the Eagle on Friday.
I'll be at the Eagle on Friday, slinging dick for the bear crowd. Bad Johnson, it's a great movie. It's a lot smarter than you think it is based off the concept. Great performances, you know, and hopefully, you know, I can get another one made. I'm thankful, and I feel blessed, and... You know.
I'm looking forward to the Jeff Tatro and Kumail Nanjiani movie.
Yes.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Oh, that would be great. That would be dream comes true right there.
Well, thanks, brother. You'll do the show again soon, I hope.
Oh, I would love. Anytime you guys want.
Love having you on, brother. We'll talk soon.
Okay? All right.
All right.
Definitely.
We'll
thank you guys so much.
We'll
thank
be
you,
back
Jeff.
Next week. Lee, Chuck, thank
yes,
you.
We'll
anything?
See you guys. Nope.
You want to do some overtime?
Go no? Support him at the Eagle.
All right, thanks, guys.
Go support. Yeah, go to the Eagle.
Support live
thanks,
dance.
Jeff. Yeah, go to the Eagle, and we're in overtime now.
All right.
Okay. Well, now people can hear this. Oh, I forgot to record in GarageBand. That's okay.
Oh, it's okay.
I didn't hear any problems with the feed, did you?
No, but that's going to be the show where what didn't sound complete, you know.
I know, it
that
always
one
is
show,
that way, right?
Yeah.
Gabriel
Iglesias or Tim Busfield. It's going to be like those.
I told you that was a fascinating story, right?
Yeah, that was a good story.
Actually, you know what? I'm glad Mikey wasn't here for that.
No.
Wait, guys,
you're a what?
Yeah,
you're a what?
You do
the
what?
For the Bears? Who's the Bears?
I'm a Bears fan. Yeah. Those kind of Bears?
Yeah. Is Giuliano still watching porn?
Yeah, he watched a whole 33-minute porno.
But like, what is he doing here? Why doesn't he just watch porn in his own house? He's going to come here and watch porn?
He's multitasking. He literally had this
girl. He wants
girl,
to go get food afterwards, I'm
he had this,
assuming.
That's probably it. He had this girl getting rammed by this guy and a picture of Aaron Sorkin kind of overlapping it, but not all the way. So you could still see the ramage, but you also get
well, he's got the new windows, so you can split screens.
Oh. God. He split screens between Aaron Sorkin and porn.
Like Woodstock, only with naked women. It's a nice split screen there.
I'm like, look at this. I'm like, Giuliano. And I'm seeing Aaron Sorkin, pussy, and dick.
Your mom said to Caesar, no boners in her basement. She should have said that to Anthony.
It's all producers.
Yeah.
It goes for
all
producers. That's a universal
and
thing.
Chuck and Mikey. Really, everybody.
So I told you, though, Chuck, Jeff's great, but
you've changed my mind. I'll see the movie now.
There you go. There you go. See? The man is...
What?
He said hit the applause track.
You should produce from there,
late.
And we'll plug your computer in.
Because,
I'm
seriously...
I'm sorry, we didn't mean
by
to
looking
interrupt
at the trailer,
the
it looked like 40 days
well,
and 30 nights.
Well, they can't put in all the good stuff.
Well,
it's rated
I don't
R.
know that.
It's
I'm just looking at the trailer,
R.
and it looked like another version of 40 days and 40
nights. I know,
nights,
but, like, Bad Words. You see the Bad Words trailer, and you're like, oh, that could be funny. But, like, they don't put in the funniest stuff because
well,
it's
right,
inappropriate
right.
for green trailers.
Right.
The green trailer.
Yeah.
Not the red trailer. Now, the red trailer was probably good.
I did.
See
it. I'll see it now.
Yeah. I think you may be able to pick up some gigs dancing in L.A. at this in Silver Lake.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could.
Give me a couple weeks to grow out my back hair. Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure the bear community would love you.
They like me. I got big back hair.
I
got
to tell you, I think maybe like four or five years ago,
up.
4 or 5 years ago, I would have been like, dancing for the gays? No. Never going to happen. Probably last year if I had that kind of body, which I don't. Jeff was in Playgirl, by the way, as well. If I had that kind of body, I'd do it. I'd do it. Why not?
A year ago?
Yeah, give me money. Yeah, no. Give me money. Oh, no, now, after...
A year ago was when you were at your gayest.
Yes. Now, after...
Yeah, he was.
Now, after going to all the clubs and shit, though, and seeing, like, some seedy shit and stuff, then I'd take that back. But
yeah.
Jeff probably deals with some really seedy shit.
Oh, I'm sure there's stuff he doesn't want to tell us.
Well,
or doesn't want to tell, like, an audience.
Oh, yeah, I know some stuff. It's no bueno. No bueno. But it was kind of racy to go there, but we are right. Latinos are the gayest straight guys
they
ever.
They are. I don't
they
mind.
They all say they're straight. They all say they're straight.
Listen, you guys can pad your language. I'll say it. They are really, really crazy.
No, they're really, really gay. They're really pervy.
Yeah.
They're pervy.
Super pervy.
And here's the thing I've noticed from all the gay clubs I've been to. There's so many Latinos that claim they're bi or straight, and you're just like,
dude,
you just want to take this microphone right now and just start banging it against your fucking head going, oh, my God, why am I listening
Which
to
Which I don't get, because it's like you look at them and you listen to them, and they're obviously gay.
No, yeah, this is what one guy literally said when I was at the Abbey once, and he's a Latino guy. Maybe it was at Mickey's or something, but one of the gay bars in L.A., and he goes, oh, yeah, no, I'm completely straight. My girlfriend waits for me. You know, she's around. She's somewhere. I don't know where she is.
Where'd she go?
And this guy walked up to her. He's like, hey, I mean, he's like, girl, I'm straight. And it was a guy.
Oh, God.
And what straight guy says, girl?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here, and I'm like, this is the funniest shit
I've
ever
funny.
Seen.
That is funny. Maybe he's just like a comic genius.
Wouldn't
like, it's
it
all one giant joke.
Wouldn't it be great if he's convinced he's straight, though?
Oh, yeah. Some of them probably are.
Like, he's convinced. He's like, girl, I am straight.
Yeah.
Like, and he's really, like, convinced he's
well,
straight.
There are those, like,
until you bring him to a strip club.
Well, those there are those Christian guys. You know, those Christian guys that do it, and they say that, like, the devil did it to them.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't them. Like, the devil made them. Suck a cock.
No, that could be. Or you bring them to a strip club and they're like Lenny, where they're like, girl, you should open up an empanada factory.
Hey, where do you go for good beef in Atlanta?
Where do you go for good empanadas in Atlanta? You get good empanadas over there? I could take you.
No. Here's what we do when we go in there. I'm this person, you're this person, you're this person. We don't give them our real names, okay? We don't want them to know who we are. Yeah.
Now people don't know.
Don't pretend like you don't know me.
Lenny, don't pretend like you don't know about this.
You don't know me. You only think I do.
You don't know me. You only think you do. You act like you know me, but you don't know me not.
We do have the straight gay Latino voices down.
I know. We are killing that voice.
We could really do well in Three Amigos do.
Yeah. Three Amigos part two.
Get us some voiceover work, man.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I'll work on that. Jeff's like refreshingly honest, too, which is nice.
Yeah.
You get some people on the show, and they don't talk about jerking off. It's weird.
Yeah. Pretend like they
if
don't.
If they
do
don't
it.
Talk about jerking off when they're on our show, they're not honest artists.
The fact that Tim Matheson doesn't come on the show and talk about jerking off, I'm offended.
Yeah,
no,
but
Tim was awesome.
Tim was
like
pretty
Chevy
open.
Chase,
yeah,
he's
fuck
an asshole.
Yeah, it was then and he still is.
The best thing was I didn't even get to ask Tim if Chevy was an asshole.
No,
I just have a question about Chevy. He goes, he's an asshole.
He offered that information.
Yeah, right. That was great.
Smiling with through his veneers
what
about
happened,
it.
What happened to Turzo and Luisi?
Don't know and don't know.
I thought you were going to say even better, don't know and don't care.
Well, I don't.
I forgot, though, the way the story really went was I told Luisi he should abort his child. That's
we
what I said.
Covered that.
But
Chuck corrected you afterwards.
Thanks for the correction.
It's a callback.
That's a callback to 2 hours ago.
Well, for Anthony.
Where are we
he
go
broke away
food?
From the porn.
Where are we
going
to get food? Because I know Anthony wants food. Jesus. I just know he does. Going to Scores.
The Gentleman's Club?
Yeah, I'm going to drive to Stone Park on a Wednesday night.
Can we preemptively have Anthony arrested? Seriously.
Yes.
For sex crimes
for
in the future.
For sex crimes that he's going to commit. We should do a little pre-crime.
Is this time cop?
Yeah.
Minority Report?
Yeah, a little pre-crime unit for Anthony's wiener.
It's Minority Report for Anthony's sex habit.
Yeah, right. When you go to unlock the trunk of your car, do you get a hard-on when you stick the key in? Okay.
Oh, he
that's
drives
pretty intense.
He drives a truck.
but I will say that.
Where's your friend Luisi?
I have no idea.
Where's your other friend Terzo?
We should give a shout out to Delilah Darling for this episode.
Who's that?
The porn star he's been watching for the last 15 minutes.
Oh,
she's on her second video. She is pretty hot.
Oh, Jesus.
Little
you know,
redhead, and I like redhead.
If Terzo was here, he would have broken that computer. He would have been like, what do you mean you dance for the homosexuals?
Yeah.
I could never dance for the homeless. And he would play it off like that was legitimately an option, Terzo dancing.
Because, you know, the last time I was at a gay club, Maddie, the bouncer came up to me and offered me to dance there. And I said, listen, pal, right. I don't dance for the homosexuals.
Yeah, you know, that's the funniest thing about Mikey, though, is he plays off situations like that like he could legitimately be in them.
Yeah,
like he's like you dance for the homosexuals in your thong.
But he,
I would never do such a thing. I'm not doing that.
He paints,
no one asked.
He paints himself as like a bemused traveler who just winds up in these situations and is baffled by them.
Yeah, right.
And he's like picking apart logical inconsistencies. Like, well, how do they manage when they're up there dancing? What if they got a piss or something and it's the beginning of the song?
He does do that.
You know, things like that. I don't know, Mikey. What do you?
Yeah, that's Mikey for you.
You sweat so much, you don't have to go.
Yeah. Every time they move, they just drip sweat on you.
But my favorite thing is just like when Mikey carries on conversation as if he was a 170-pound man. Like, that's my favorite thing, where he's like, yeah, okay, we go to, I wish he was here to tell the story. We go to Super Walmart the other day. It's me, him, and Steve. And Steve's out of town, that's why he's not here. But it was me, him, and Steve, and we're talking to Mikey, and Mikey's talking about how his mom bought him Under Armour underwear. Okay? First of all, I don't know what size underwear that is.
Throw blanket size?
So Mikey,
you knit a couple of them together, you got a little sale for a.
But remember, Mikey's telling this story like he's Chris Evans or something, okay? And he's like, so
you know, my bicep, it's too small for my biceps, Matthew.
He's
Maddie.
Like, I try on this underwear, and I look in the mirror, and you could see more things in this underwear than you do when I'm naked. I can't wear this. I don't even want to see me in this. And I'm standing there next to Steve, and I'm like,
that's so great.
Oh, I don't want any visuals of this. No visuals. So then he goes into graphic detail. He goes, no, really, you could see things in the underwear that you can't see when I'm naked. That's how much the underwear shows.
What, Aurora Borealis?
I think the underwear brings everything together, if you will.
Yeah. So it's
it brings it all in the same area, like Spanx or something. And
so it just like herds all of his parts into one small herd.
You may not see that often. Yeah.
What was with that one over the hip underwear that he miraculously found and sent us out of eBay of all places? Was he buying that stuff?
No, that's not for him. Why would he? Who's selling G strings to guys like Mike?
Yeah,
they
that was
those.
To me. Like
that
was
to you.
Joke to me,
but where
I
did
don't
he
remember.
Find it?
Yeah.
They got
how
ones
he come across
pages.
They got
like
ones that
Google?
Say home of the Whopper.
Right, yeah, yours. Yeah. Is he like Googling like thongs or like but like the one time where he's like what were we talking about? We were talking about chicks and he started sending all the porn and I privately text Lenny and this cat's out of the bag on this now, but I privately text Lenny and I go, because he was acting like they were pictures on his phone. Oh, yeah, remember, someone sent a picture from their phone of some naked chick they had on their phone. I don't know if it was me. It may have been me. And Terzo's like, oh, yeah, like this, like this, like this, like this. Like they were like girls sending him pictures. And I text Lenny and I go, well, we know Terzo can Google the word porn. So I'm wondering if he was like Googling thongs when he sent you that picture. He sends a picture to Chucky of like this guy who's in like, what is it?
Like a weird-looking Andre the Giant singlet,
but
it's much smaller.
But it's only a thong.
You guys are all really fucked up.
Not me.
It was to make fun of me, but I don't remember why he was making fun of me or what the point of it was.
Well, sometimes his jokes are a little
not
too
funny.
Smart for even us. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's what they are.
But just
I was
like to
diplomatic.
See your face when you saw it? Like that was what he wanted?
Well, no, because I was at
work.
No,
we were texting.
Oh.
I was at work, so I don't remember. I was just like, all right, thanks.
I just remember it was a disturbing picture. I'm like, thanks for putting this on my telephone.
But yet he got mad at me yesterday when he was asking you about the British stuff that you were talking about. He wanted the web address, and I put www.google.com.
Oh, I never got your message. For some reason, Anthony, Lenny, and you, the droiders, haven't been able to send me all their messages. So I didn't get your message, and I go, is Terzo yelling at me?
No, he's yelling
at
me.
What did I do? Yeah. And I figured it was you, so I like ran upstairs like a fucking moron. I'm like, I'm going to run upstairs and get good signal, and I'll get whatever this genius Chucky message was. Why you got to show me that? All right, I see. I saw it the first time.
Yeah, but
I
what was it for?
Well, now Lee has the visual. That's what Mikey's sending out for shits and gigs.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like when Binder sometimes sends out, like, weird stuff, and you're like, do you have that in the archives or something? And, like, do you go to, like, a weirdo website to find this shit? Like,
see, I don't think sending that is, like, funny. And I think dumb shit is funny. Like,
Oh, you're missing out on dumber shit.
Yeah, right. You're wrong.
But, yeah, he got mad at me yesterday because he wanted the web address, and I wrote google.com.
Well, I texted Lenny to see if he wanted to go to breakfast tomorrow at this place I want to go to called the Waffle Cafe. Mm-hmm. And if he does not get back to me, he's not going, but they now have waffle donuts.
I heard about that.
Hey, calm down. You're not going. I'm going. I'm going to get waffle donuts.
Did I even ask
to
go?
You're not even up at that time.
Are the waffles better than that place on Clark by Diversity, Zucker?
Oh, that's another place.
Yeah.
But this is just called the Waffle Cafe, and they make all kinds of waffle-related nonsense. Now, I hate this kind of stuff. I kind of hate when people are like the Cronut or the like combine this with that and blah, blah, blah. However, there's something magical about
waffles
and frosting.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of frosting on a waffle.
Well, this place, Zucker, has the same thing. And it's a snack. It's like a Belgian-style snack waffle.
That's what they have for these two. They're like waffle donuts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you hold it in your hand, you know, like a big thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
They make it
fresh. I think I'm going to go try one maybe tomorrow.
Freaking delicious, man.
You can go, but I don't know if the train takes you there.
What time is this at?
I don't know, in the morning, breakfast.
Yeah, I got work, no.
Len and I do breakfast.
Yeah, Len doesn't go into the office till noon.
No comment. By the way, we're at that production meeting last week, and I go, hey, Len, should I book my Vegas ticket now, you think? It's like 320, it's like 320. He goes, I'll be cheaper next week on Tuesday.
$80 more expensive?
$100.
That's close.
So then he says to me today.
For a round trip?
It'll be cheaper next week with 3 weeks to go. Yeah, round trip.
$320 Vegas?
Yeah, round trip. Yeah. You can get $220.
Where are you guys going? Late
trip,
man.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lot.
If you want to take Spirit, you can take $220 round trip.
Yeah,
we're going May 18th to the 21st. I may go longer. I may go like May 16th to the 21st. So I call him today and he goes, wait till next week. It'll be 3 weeks out. Tuesday, cheapest tickets. How much you want to bet I'm going to be paying 500 bone for this fucking ticket? Yeah?
Nah, not that much. Like 480.
How much do you... Yeah, right. How much do you trust Lenny?
Probably like 430.
You know what? And I'm thinking, of course Lenny sucks at this. His office is paying for his ticket. What the fuck does he care?
Right.
He probably bought an $800 United ticket. I could have... But this is what pisses me off. The prices aren't outrageous. Like, I can take Spirit for $280, right? But I could have taken United 2 weeks ago for, like, $380. So I'm pissed.
Yeah.
Because now every United ticket's, like, $700.
Right.
So now I have to take a shit airline probably have to take a shit airline. And I hate flying. I hate flying even more on shitty fucking airlines.
Oh, yeah.
I had written into my contract for a show that I cannot be flown in Southwest. Swear to God. I have no, like, little nitpicky bullshit other than that. There are no, like, white M&Ms or whatever.
Yeah.
Literally, I can't be flown
That's
in
not
Southwest.
Too much to ask.
No, no, I said anything
I like
but
Southwest.
Southwest. Really?
Yeah, I fly that all the time.
Here's the thing. Everyone knows how much I hate Southwest at this moment. If I caved in, went to Vegas on Southwest, I'd never hear the end of it from my parents. Because I bust their nuts all the time about how they take Southwest.
I've never had a bad experience with Southwest.
I sat next
I
to this
either.
Fat black lady once that was reading from
the
Bible.
Yeah, it's Southwest.
Reading from the... Thank you. This is my point. Reading from the Bible out loud on the plane with her acrylic nails. And then she started touching me and telling me about Jesus. I'm good. Southwest is out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I know what I just said sounded incredibly profiled and racist, but
no.
Southwest is out.
Yeah, right.
I've never had an experience like that.
You never sat next to a fatty on Southwest in those small fucking seats?
Did she have two seats?
Come on.
I'm usually the fattest person.
She had one.
Yeah, me too.
I'm usually the fattest person.
Really?
Yeah, I've never had a bad experience on Southwest.
They don't have TV on Southwest.
Yeah, I sleep most of the time.
Yeah, I sleep.
What are you watching?
I get a couple of...
Lee knows my trick. I like leaving L.A. at night so I can watch Bulls games and stuff on the flight.
See, I have a couple of drinks.
Would put me to sleep.
I mean, you
I
can't,
plan,
but like I have a couple of drinks and I just take a nap.
Yeah,
or I read.
I plan my flights around sports. Lee's always dropping me off at the airport like 7 and picking me up at 11.
Yeah.
And I'm sure sometimes people are like, why those... It's always the same time. Because I plan my flights around sporting events. I'm like, oh, the Bulls are playing tonight at 7. I'm going to take the flight.
Yeah, right.
WGN on Virgin.
Let's see. The Bulls, the Cubs, the Hawks, the
Thursday
Sox.
Night
Who
football.
Am I going to watch blow it tonight?
Yeah, right. Thursday night football, Monday night football. Kirk Heinrich's the worst. Retire.
Yeah, they should.
He's so bad.
Yeah, they shouldn't.
Why is he closing out both these games, these first two games?
I don't know.
Who says, you know who should
I
have
think,
the ball? Not Taj.
I think Tibbs.
Not Taj.
I think Tibbs is going to walk.
Yeah, it's like you got other options than Kirk Heinrich to close your games out.
Right.
Taj, DJ, someone else.
Yeah.
Other than Kirk. Someone else other than, what is he, 37 now or something?
Yeah.
He can barely move. He wears a face mask. He turns over the ball more than anyone I've ever seen in Bulls history outside of maybe Ron Harper.
Yeah.
Okay? Like,
Purdue.
Are you kidding me? Two nights in a row. And then last night, the thing he's good at, they're in overtime, Chucky. I know you love basketball.
Oh, I love it so much.
They're in overtime. 2 seconds left. He goes to the line. They're two down. Kirk Heinrich. Well, fuck. Thank God. Because if one guy can hit free throws, whew, it's Kirk Heinrich. Thank the Lord. First one up. Boing!
Yeah, but you're not talking about, and I only know this from the news this morning, I heard that they didn't score a basket the first 3 minutes of overtime.
Okay, you know who was a part of not scoring a basket the first 3 minutes of overtime? Kirk Heinrich.
But he's not the only one.
I understand that, but if he's going to go 0 forever, then give it to someone else and see if they get 1 for 12. I don't care.
Yeah.
He sucks. The one thing he's good at, and he misses the first basket. And then the second basket was like the worst miss ever on purpose, but it didn't matter. John Wall got it, and he threw the ball 4,000 feet, and game's over. The first game, why is he taking the last shot?
Yeah.
Who says Kirk Heinrich is shooting this ball?
What do you want to shoot, a Boozer?
Over Heinrich? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Get the ball inside to Boozer. Taj Gibson from the midcourt.
Under the basket, yeah.
Taj, I could see.
Taj Gibson, mid-jumper. Why not?
No, I haven't watched a basketball game in 2 years. So
okay.
Who am I to comment?
Jimmy Butler. Before fucking Kirk Heinrich.
Yeah.
Okay? And Butler's not that great, but he's better than Heinrich.
Yeah, you're right about that.
I just don't get it. I'm like, and I don't think it's Thibodeau's idea.
No, it's not.
He's not like, you know who we should give the ball to is Kirk. Yeah, he's money in these situations. But once again, this goes back to a bigger issue. This is why it's never going to really be Kirk's fault and everyone thinks I'm being an asshole taking it out on him. Like on Facebook, everyone thinks I'm a dick. Because if Derrick Rose wasn't hurt, Derrick Rose would be the guy taking that shot.
Yeah, right.
And playing that position.
Yeah. He's not even a shooter.
I understand.
I'd still give him the ball.
Well, here's the thing. Just think of the logic here. Kirk Heinrich's a point guard for 12 years.
Right.
Now all of a sudden he's a shooting guard. No, not good. Not a good idea at all. And let's give it to the guy that barely plays this position. Can't play it well, and isn't a shooter.
No.
Like, Kirk Heinrich as a shooting guard is an oxymoron. It's terrible. It's like why they didn't pick up Danny Granger, why they didn't pick up someone else who has experience as a shooting guard.
Yeah.
I mean, they picked up everybody else. This team made, like, 5 midseason moves.
Yeah, they did.
DJ Augustine. They picked up... who else did they pick up? They picked up Jimmer Fredette.
Right.
They picked up all these guys, middle of the year. When Granger went out, when the Pacers let go of Granger, why didn't you say, yeah, let's bring in the old guy?
Because, yeah, I don't know why. I don't have an answer for
Heinrich
that.
Is good for 12 minutes. He is Derek Fisher. He is good for 12 minutes. Mop up minutes, and start of the second quarter, start of the third quarter type stuff.
Yeah.
He is not a 40-minute-a-game guy anymore. He's not.
No.
He's too injured. He's too beat up. He's done. All right, Anthony, let's go get food. I think we got to go. No, I see what you're doing. I know, no, that's code for I'm fucking hungry. All right, but
are you, Anthony? I'm spent.
Yeah, I'm spent from all that porn.
For some reason, the desk's sticky, too.
Oh. Hey, by the way, before we go, Camille was great, though, too.
Right? Oh, yeah.
What a nice guy.
Art's good to talk to Chicago people who started, you know. And
we had a Chicago guy, and then we had a movie that was filmed in Chicago.
Yeah.
By the way, yeah, I didn't know Bad Johnson was in Chicago until I saw it. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, I think they stole one of our shots. Or we are now stealing one of theirs. And I'm like, fuck, gotta go back and reshoot that.
Okay, all
right. They did do one thing right. They shot during the summer,
yeah,
obviously.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like 3 different seasons in our movie.
Well, it's about one man's journey, so
yeah,
it's
right.
Called After Effects.
Yeah, it's called Odyssey.
Plenty of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get back to filming May 22nd. It's looking
really
like. May 22nd, 23rd, 25th, June. 3 days in June and 4 days in July. But I don't think we're doing anything with the girls till
why
June.
Why
July.
The spread out dates? Production meeting.
Crew got busy. Big gigs coming up for them and stuff, and okay. We had to squeeze it in when we could squeeze it in. Part of making an independent film.
Okay.
I couldn't give our crew $10,000 budgets.
Yeah.
And that sucks. That's just how it works. And by the way, not even that. I'd have to give our crew to get our crew 10 days in a row. I would probably have to give them a loan to not do these corporate gigs. $100,000. That's how much they're getting paid to do other gigs.
Wow. All right. I understand.
That's the budget for these other gigs.
I got you.
So then I have to go up there with my hands in a prayer position and be like, can we do 3 days in May, 3 days in June, 4 days in July?
When you have your hands in the prayer position over that mic, is the mic supposed to also represent something else?
Oh, God.
Jesus. Everything out of his yapper.
Fucking Amber Alert.
Amber Alert.
No, really. What did you do with that young girl? For the Amber Alert. Never mind.
What young girl? That's what he's supposed to say.
Right.
Well done. Your lawyer taught you well. Oh.
The one with the bar, without the bar.
Oh, you mean Lenny? He's going to graduate. So where do you want to go eat, Charles?
I'm going home. I have food waiting for me at home.
What do you have?
Tuna salad.
Guinevere made you tuna salad?
No, roommate number one made tuna salad.
Your mother made you tuna
salad? No. Mom's roommate number two.
Same thing. Number two. Okay. Yeah.
Dad came home from Florida.
Dad makes tuna salad?
Yeah.
Is it ain't good?
Yeah.
Is it Jewy tuna?
No.
Is it Jewy tuna salad
it's
or Italian tuna salad?
It's just tuna, dry tuna fish with like vegetables chopped up, and then I just put a little mild jardiniera.
What kind
on
of
it.
Vegetables?
Carrots.
Oh God.
Celery.
End the show.
Onion.
Here's how I make my tuna salad. I'm gonna throw this out there for everyone. I knew it was Italian tuna salad. Your dad's so fucking Italian. Okay.
He is 100%.
Only Italians put fucking green peppers in tuna salad, by the way. That's a totally Italian thing.
It's good.
You do the Trinity. The Trinity, that's an Italian thing, though, too. The Trinity's in everything, okay?
Yeah.
You put in the Trinity. Tuna salad. Trinity. And here's the kicker. Well, you use the mayo, but use the good kind of mayo. Okay?
We don't put mayo in it.
What?
We don't put mayo in it.
What holds it together? What makes
you put
salad?
A little bit of you put
olive
like,
oil?
Yeah,
you fucking Italian.
It's so good.
Sausage
you're
and peppers.
So fucking Italian. Yeah. All right,
and a little bit of garlic. It's so good.
Oh,
no,
man.
Garlic.
Garlic.
All right. Here's how you make real tuna
no
salad.
No mayo.
No, you use some Hyman's mayo, the good stuff. Okay.
Hey.
You use the carrots,
mayo,
the celery.
That would make
the
it
onion.
Taste too moist and delicious.
I know,
if
right?
You put mayo in it,
and then you throw in raisins. Raisins bring it some sweetness.
Oh, I forgot cucumbers.
No, see, raisins and relish bring it sweetness. So you can either do relish or raisins, not both. Too sweet then. But relish or raisins, and that's a great tuna salad.
Yeah, you know what? You have yours, I'll have mine.
Whatever. Yours sounds fucking retarded. I'm not supposed to say retarded anymore. Yours sounds fucking,
you're putting tartar sauce in tuna.
I didn't say tartar sauce. I said mayo.
What do you think mayo and relish is?
It's not mayo and relish is not tartar sauce.
Yeah, it is.
Not completely.
What's missing?
I'm gonna
a pinch of salt.
No, oh, whatever. You know what? Yeah. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. You put tartar sauce in tuna? That sounds ridiculous. It's fish. It's fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. It actually sounds genius to put tartar sauce in tuna. You tard. I can say tart. I can't say retard.
Why don't we?
That's
do
all
that?
You're doing is you're putting tartar sauce in fish.
Wait, why
or
don't
tuna.
We say,
that's not really a tuna salad.
Why don't we say retard anymore? Retarder sauce.
It's supposedly.
You're inhumane and
did
not
somebody,
a bastard.
Somebody came down on you?
A lot of people's feelings are getting hurt over it.
Really?
Yeah. You know what it is? More
that's
and more,
the most offensive thing on this show, of course.
More and more people are having kids that aren't like. You know, they're not like normal.
Yeah.
So
they rock that extra
well,
chromosome.
You know what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, you know what? When we were making fun of blacks, gays,
no, that was fine.
You're laughing at that, but then when it comes to your thing, you're offended. So that thing is one thing, and then another thing, okay.
Well,
sorry.
Trust me, straight Latino men are not happy with
that's really fucking,
the moment either.
Yeah, well.
And if they could write emails, they would.
Yeah. I don't think those Latino men
are. If they could afford
listening.
Phones that have email capacity.
That's pretty retarded of them.
Who said that?
Oh.
Okay, so tuna salad, that's how you make tuna salad.
I don't give a
yeah.
shit.
All right, you have your tartar sauce. I'll
and what else
sauce.
Do you have at home? Tuna salad and one.
Oh, my God.
That's it?
Yeah.
We gotta put it on bread.
You're just trying to piss off Anthony at this point. Look at him.
No,
I'm making him
hungry. I'm going to go home, like I'm going to eat salad. That, and I'm going to watch the Hawks game.
Is that still on?
9:30 it starts.
Well,
hey-o.
We better get going. It's 9:30.
Yeah, let's go. Fuck.
All right, well, we'll see you next week. Or no, I may have a show tomorrow, by the way. Hillary Winston may be on it. I don't know. Well, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that either.
Are you just taping an interview?
No. Pat wanted to do a show.
Oh, boy. Pat. I got to work,
Pat.
Buddy.
Pat, people have lost.
Oh, Lee can't make it. Can't do it.
Well, we got Terzo. We got Chuck. He's not busy till Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Bring over Lady Guinevere. She could do the show.
She's got class.
Thank God. She's still in school?
She went back to school. She dropped out for a while.
Oh, yeah, you told me this story.
Call
like
me sometime when you have no class.
I was kind of
back
listening.
Back to school.
Yeah,
no, she's not 19, goof. Haven't you met her?
No, I haven't met her. Supposedly I met her, but I don't remember meeting her.
Is it that Lone Wolf bar?
That's where I work next to that. That's our.
I know.
I was there.
And I like
know.
That.
I go
like,
there all the time.
It's good.
Yeah.
Their food is actually pretty
the
good.
Food is like an afterthought because they had to get some kind of license. So yeah,
they
but,
all
I mean,
do.
I can get the Scotch egg.
They
yeah.
all do.
The Scotch eggs are very good.
Yeah.
Was that good? The Scotch egg.
Huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. I was gonna say something, but I forgot. Never mind.
That I was there that night, but I don't.
Oh yeah, no. But when Mikey was, he was like, you know, Lone Wolf, and I'm like, what's that? Lone Wolf. Yeah. What bar is that? Lone Wolf. Yeah. Keep repeating the name of the bar because it's obviously not helping.
Mikey is really pissing you guys off lately. It sounds like.
Did you get your eyebrows done?
I trimmed my eyebrows.
They look fabulous.
Them, yes.
Oh, you trimmed them?
Oh no, when I cut my hair, she did. She did sweep them up a little.
They look good.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm going this week for my wax.
Well, you know, now that I'm going to be a Hollywood movie star, I got to
look
better.
Hey, you got to get those waxed. Mm.
I haven't just gone trim. That far yet.
Guido and I get ours waxed at the same place.
You and Guido go to get your eyebrows. So actually, you're making fun of me about
not
my
together.
Tuna salad.
Not together.
Oh, all right.
Well, yeah, that is a little Italian going to get our eyebrows.
I thought you guys went together.
I don't know. I don't know how long I am from getting manis and petties with one, I'll tell you that.
I'll do it once just to do it. I never had one in my life.
You know, I would actually do it once, too. Just yeah,
with Len?
For the story.
Maybe.
Because
I
really
want to see him act
out.
I want to. Yeah. I want to see how Len acts while he's.
Yeah, right.
On.
I just want to see.
So
Asian...
you're still in school, huh? Like what he says to the woman.
I just
like...
want to see these Asians stare at those ham hocks and be like,
"Yeah, right.
We're going to need another court."
Yeah.
No, I'm Vito Tomaselli from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
How you doing, sweetheart?
Yeah, sir. Can you wrap
just,
your?
Just kidding, to Vito Tomaselli.
Sir, right. Can you put your big sausagey thick fingers up
right.
here so I can file them?
He didn't get back to me about breakfast, so fuck him. All right, we're going to go eat. Enjoy the Hawks game.
All right.
Go Hawks.